What's going on?
Not much.
What are you doing today?
Let's see. There's a lunch party thing that's happening that we have to go to.
And family or work?
Oh no, these are some friends that are coming up. And then I think I'll visit my stepmom later. And then tomorrow I have to go back to the junkyard so I can get the rear window on my car is broken. It's a busy weekend. And so, it'll go down, but it won't go up with the switch. So I have to go to the junkyard and see if I can find the part to make it go back up. So
what part to make what go up?
It's part of, like, the window regulator. Like, the motor.
Oh, yeah. I just recently had both my regulators break on my Dodge.
Ugh.
Yeah. And it's expensive. I mean, I paid a lot, but I didn't go try to put it together myself.
I'm going to go to the junkyard and handle some business, see how this works.
Yeah.
I've done it before. I've done it before, so it shouldn't be that bad, but
yeah.
I have to wait on someone's going to come help me.
Is it actually stuck in the down position, or?
Oh, no, I manually pulled it up.
Oh, it's hard to pull up.
Yes, but
did it go too far down?
Right now it only, because I noticed it early, so I never pushed it all the way down. So the position is actually currently stuck. If it does fall down, it only goes down a little bit, so I can just continue to push back up until I go get it fixed.
I'm gonna put this in the show notes. Auto repair.
So actually, if you have a junkyard
window
near you, if you have a junkyard near you, it makes a lot of repairs much more feasible if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, because sometimes they don't have the part, and you have to go extract it yourself.
That's what this place is. It's a lot full of cars, and you have to go find the. Fortunately, they have a list.
Mm-hmm.
On the internet, so you can go to the website and check to see if they have your car. And if not, they have another feature where you can type in the part you need and what model car you have, and they'll tell you. Like, maybe they don't have your car, but they have, like, these other cars that use the same. Like, if you have, like, a General Motors car, like I do, you're lucky, because a lot of times the bulk parts, like, they have a lot of my car there. But if they didn't have my car there, I could easily go and find, like, a Pontiac Grand Am that's the exact same car that my car is, so.
Yeah. Just take your box of tools and just take it out yourself.
Yep, yeah, you take your box of tools and you walk in there and you find the car that's yours and you rip the door off and you slab whatever parts you need and you pull them out. And then you go and you pay for them, and they're way, way cheaper. And, like, there's, like, you can, for $1 or $2, add a warranty on it, so that if you go home and put it in your car and it doesn't work, you can just take it back and get another one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not bad.
Yeah, it's just not a good way to spend the holiday.
Oh, well, we're going to go at 8 in the morning.
Oh, okay.
And they open at 8. We're going to try to get there at 8 o'clock in the morning, handle the business, like, run, find the cars, take everything out. Come back, fix it. We're hoping that we can be finished by like 9:30 before the sun comes up, really. Like, before he starts baking us in his heat.
Wow, that's optimistic.
It is optimistic.
at least you have a plan. A lot of people don't have a plan. You know, they don't know how to plan.
No. So, yeah, we have a plan in motion. We're going to see if we can handle this. And then, after that, we're going to go hide, because the Democratic National Convention starts, I think it starts tomorrow, or Tuesday. No, it probably starts on Tuesday, not on Labor Day. I don't know. But anyway, Charlotte is going to be completely destroyed for about a week, because the city infrastructure was not really designed to have a convention the size of the Democratic National Convention come to town.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is just going to be completely shut down. Like, the traffic is going to be terrible. Like, I quit already. Just, I want no part of this. But, hey, that's life.
Yeah. Is North Carolina Democratic?
Nope.
Oh, it's Republican?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just didn't – well, because of the religion, right?
Yep.
Yeah. It's so funny, though, how much religion plays into people's choices. And really, politics should have nothing to do with it. It should be separate.
Ideally, but people don't separate them because they don't. And so it informs all of their opinions about how everything should be run.
Right.
And that's all that goes.
Yeah.
But it's
become more about things that I think are not important to the country, like, and things that are, you know.
Well, like,
half of it's important. Half of it, I think, has gotten too political. I mean, like, religious and.
It's gotten a little out of hand.
Yeah, and tackling issues that I think should be at the individual's choice, you know.
Right. There's a lot of things like that that gets gotten a little out of hand, a lot out of hand as of late. And like the thing is, North Carolina used to be a Democratic state like a while ago because of labor stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's moved quickly away from that in the past like 10 or so years. And yeah, like I think, I don't know because I don't keep up with this stuff really as far as like who won what states. But I think Obama won North Carolina in 2004.
Yeah, he won.
It's been 2008.
He won Colorado too, but
yeah,
and that's kind of
usual. There's no way that's happening again this time around. Like,
yeah, things are going to change.
Changed a lot, but yeah. So, but the convention is in Charlotte, and Charlotte is a big city as far as money goes. Like, it makes a lot of money because we used to be the home of banks that don't exist anymore. But like, we are the second largest banking city in the country after New York, right? So, like, it's a big money city.
Yeah.
But it's not designed as a big city. It's like, it's a very definition of urban sprawl. Like, it's way too big. It's a bunch of small towns that were connected into slightly bigger city. Like, look, Bill's here.
Yeah, Bill's joining in on automotive noise and politics.
Political noise.
Political noise. I hope you came prepared.
And also civic planning noise.
I did not get the memo.
City planning noise?
Yeah. See, because what happened with Charlotte is that the municipality of Charlotte just bought up like all the small places around Charlotte. And so like things like Mint Hill and Matthews and other areas that are not technically Charlotte are now technically a part of Charlotte. Charlotte extends into South Carolina. It's a fact some people aren't aware of, but like the city of Charlotte exists in two different states. So
really,
yep. Now some of the lines have been moved recently, and people are pissed off about it because some people like technically live in Charlotte, but their address would be like some podunk town in South Carolina. So they get the benefits of like Charlotte city stuff, but the tax rate of South Carolina, which is way less than it is in North Carolina. But they're redoing a line, so all of Charlotte will be in North Carolina now, and people are mad about this because their taxes are going to like seriously make a massive increase. So, yeah.
But so as it was before, they were getting stuff for free, essentially, right?
Yes.
Or because the money they were paying for taxes wasn't going to the stuff they were getting, technically.
Right. They were paying taxes for paying some city taxes, but they weren't paying the state taxes. Like, they didn't have to do the state the car inspection stuff or anything. And so it was a really weird mess for a while. For a long time, really. But they just fixed that. So next year, people are moving now. Like, a lot of people are moving out to find cheaper taxes. A lot of people work on the border of the Carolinas and then just drive half an hour, 45 minutes to an hour to work every day. Because it's cheaper to do that than it is to live in Charlotte.
So far I got in the show notes, auto repair, city planning,
yeah,
and politics.
Yeah. Basically, I live an interesting life. That's what I do now.
So what's going on, Bill?
Just chilling.
Yeah? You enjoying your 3-day weekend so far?
I actually took Friday off, so I got a 4-day weekend.
Oh, damn. Well, I'm going to Baltimore, so I only have to work 2 more days.
Look at you. Next weekend?
Hell yeah.
Nice.
I get to watch 2 babies get drunk. And I have to make sure they get to their places okay.
It's going to be so much fun for you. I'm going to get into more fights.
Yeah, at least Daryl is like, he's like, I'll just take a taxi, you know? But
he
takes a taxi across the street. That's what bothers me. It's like, why are you going to pay this guy to drive you a block? It doesn't make any sense.
He doesn't trust himself to be able to make that block. I thought he wasn't drinking anymore.
I'm going to hold his hand. He's going to cut loose in Baltimore. I just know it. Well, Keith is there. I mean, he's not going to.
I got you. He just says.
He doesn't drink as much as he used to.
Oh, right? Yeah.
It's because something has gone down a way.
I think he'll have a casual beer, but he doesn't get like Keith. But Keith is sharing a room with them. He's going to influence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's over. Hard while he's there. There's vodka all around him.
He'll get drunk off of just the fumes.
Yeah. Being in the room, yeah. Just him breathing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I never. He was drunk, wasn't he?
Really impressive. Price, he's not dead afterwards. His liver didn't just quit on him right there on the spot.
Yeah, I didn't see him even like that in the Robert Atkins episodes. I was like, wow, this is the drunkest I've ever seen him. And he doesn't remember anything because last night we recorded and he was talking about stuff. So we already talked about that.
You know? What are you talking about?
Yeah. What are you talking about? So, man, I read some good comics this week.
I read some hilarious comics this week.
I read some bad ones, and I read some good ones. Yesterday was kind of a day that was very mediocre for what I chose to read. And then today, last night, was a lot better.
Better?
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know. Stop putting out bad comics, people.
Well, somebody's bad comic might be somebody's good comic. Who knows?
You never know. People like everything.
Valiant's having a sale this week on Comixology, 99 cents. You could get like 26 issues of Archer and Armstrong if you wanted.
Nice.
Yeah, for 99 cents each. Which I love Archer and Armstrong.
Do they own all their old stuff?
They own everything except for the Gold Key characters, so they won't show Magnus or Turok or Solar.
Even the Valiant ones?
They own what do you mean?
Like the comics that were that Valiant published.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's kind of like if you acquired the rights to G.I. Joe, like you know how Marvel they could print Marvel's run?
Mm-hmm.
They own those characters. So they're like Hasbro. In other words,
okay.
Yeah, and they got the rights to the comics. I assume if they're bringing them out on Comixology and doing reprints, did they get the Acclaim stuff too, or just the Valiant?
I have not heard. I think they might have the Acclaim stuff too.
But Archer and Armstrong never made it to Acclaim, so.
But I don't. I think like with the one that I really care about, which is the Christopher Priest thing. I think he has some kind of ownership to like Quantum and Woody or something. So I don't think we'll see Quantum and Woody.
Oh, he owns it himself?
Yeah, I think something was in there in that clause, but you might see like Troublemakers or some of those other series that they had. Who knows? The Visitor.
But yeah, The Visitor.
That was the kind of Pete, wasn't it? I can't remember. I think it was Harbinger. It was something to do with Harbinger. He was the Visitor.
I don't remember. That one I didn't get until later in life.
Yeah,
That was Valiant? It might have been Valiant at the end.
Which one?
Visitor?
Yeah, it was Acclaim.
Was it Acclaim?
Yeah. And then Acclaim published, I don't know if you remember, they published a Unity 2 and it never finished. I was like, damn, I was excited. Like, Jim Shooter came back to write it. I was like, oh, hell yeah. And then it's like one or two issues came out and then didn't finish. I'm like, oh, man. It's kind of like the Negation War for, what was that company called? CrossGen? They like published two issues and then the company died. It's like you get into this cool event and you're like, damn, oh, the company's dead. But one thing I'm liking about the Valiant Universe is I'm already starting to feel it. Like, I'm starting to feel it building like the way it was building before.
Did you read the Archer and Armstrong number one?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. That was awesome.
I just read it this morning.
Well, that's great.
I knew you might be talking about it. Well, I got my comics on yesterday, so. Which I was surprised I got them on a Saturday. I usually don't get stuff on Saturday.
I have been.
I think it depends.
Saturday, because they changed to FedEx on mine.
Yeah, FedEx will. Yeah, mine sometimes comes by FedEx. If it does, then I can get it on Saturday.
FedEx is faster than UPS. At least in our area, they are.
Yeah, I think it depends where you are.
They are. They tend to be. They have different delivery schedules and stuff.
And I like the way they have their hubs. So, like, you could say, I'm not going to be home. I want it left at the hub, and then I could go pick it up there.
It is easier to do that with FedEx than it is to do with UPS.
Yeah.
I have had complaints in the past with UPS as far as being able to get it rescheduled quickly. And, like, let me pick it up myself. They don't do that as much. It's annoying.
So on Archer and Armstrong, you could pick it up for 99 cents right now. Right?
The new stuff or the old stuff? All of it?
The new Archer and Armstrong.
Oh,
really?
For 99 cents. And supposedly it's a digital exclusive. I don't know what that means.
It means it's digitally exclusive to Comixology.
No, but it's supposed to have some kind of extra in there, and I don't know what the extra is yet because I haven't read it. I read the paper copy. But what'd you think, Bill?
I liked it. I had to look back at the. I looked back to the old number one to see because I couldn't remember what the old number one was to see how they changed the story. Mm-hmm. It seems like they kept fairly consistent with the general basic outline of it, but changed some of the specifics to make it kind of more contemporary.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of pseudo-political stuff in here, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
With the creationism and
a lot of religious stuff, and then plus that one sect that's controlling the 1%.
Yeah, the 1%.
So they're kind of rolling in what they're, you know, you see politically happening in Washington. So, yeah.
And then in this one you have Archer. In the old one, Archer was trained, like, by monks or whatever, right?
Right.
But in this one it looks like he was just, I don't know what, they don't really, I guess they haven't said where he was trained, but it seems like he was trained by the religious people.
Yeah, they are just as creepy in this one as they are in the old one, because this one they kind of have an amusement park, and it seems like they take in, it seems like a legit help orphan type, except they're like training them to be warriors. So they have them in like fight clubs and stuff like that, and it's really embedded underneath, I guess, an amusement park. So, like, they have, like, this amusement park where it's like a religious amusement park. And I guess they believe that humans and dinosaurs coexisted because they have, like, a woman riding a dinosaur. And it has the same premise as far as his family betraying him. You know, that's still there.
His parents, yeah.
And I love the way it opened, because one of the things that I loved about Valiant,
the past, and I
love the brothers, because, right, you know, we had Time Walker and we had Eternal Warrior and Armstrong, and and now they're all in the first issue, and it's showing them.
Yeah, I did like that, because I think in the original one they didn't reveal that until later, right?
Right.
But in this one they didn't say their names, but they set it up anyway, that there's the three brothers. It's something went down in the past.
Yeah, and I found it interesting that, you know, Fred Van Lente is writing this because he wrote Incredible Hercules, which is kind of a little bit similar.
Yeah,
but it has Hercules, you know, is kind of like Armstrong, and Archer is kind of like Amadeus Cho. But art was really nice too. Clayton Henry.
Yeah, the coloring was interesting because it was kind of like a realistic painting. Well, not a realistic painting. What am I trying to say? The way they did the coloring was like a more realistic style than that's popular these days. It was good though. I liked it.
It was like a Valiant style, because the old Valiant books didn't pop. They almost had the gold key feel to it. Do you know what I mean? At least I felt they did.
Yeah. And I liked Armstrong. He lived up to his past, where he was in the bar getting bras from the women.
Yeah, that was an awesome bar. It's like taking bras off women and they put them on the ceiling. That's pretty cool.
I don't think they were taking the bras off women, getting women to give up their bras.
Well, give the bras up, yeah.
Which, of course, Armstrong can do, no problem.
Oh, yeah, he had those women taking their bras off without... The one guy was like, come on, you could take your bra off. And she was being resistant but flirty. And then Archer butts in and kicks his ass. And she like beats his... she punches him in the face. Yeah, I liked it a lot, and I think it's only going to get better. And Clayton Henry's art, I thought was really good for the book. I don't remember his art looking like this before. I mean, I liked it in the past, but because I think he did the Alpha Flight, that short-lived humorous Alpha Flight that came out about 4 years ago or something. And it looked a lot different than this.
Yeah, I've heard his name, but I couldn't place where. Did he do like a Carnage or something?
I think Carnage USA, Micah talked about, and it was the Clayton Henry. I mean, Clayton, what was that guy's name?
I don't
remember. Or is it Clayton Henry? You're right. It's that painted look. I'll
double check.
I'm getting the names. I think you got it right, Bill. Let's see. It was Carnage USA.
I thought it was him.
No, that was Clayton Crane.
Oh, Clayton Crane.
That's yeah.
Different Clayton.
Yeah. His is a more... He came from... Clayton Crane did it like X-Force and a couple other things. I like his style, though, too. But it... I like this one. This is probably my... God, it's up there with Harbinger for me.
Apparently, Clayton Henry did Incredible Hercules.
Oh, really? So they basically took Incredible Hercules team and put him on this book, which is smart because it already has the young guy and the old guy.
Yeah, they're probably like, hey, why don't we just get these guys?
Yeah, they already
have. Here's a bit similar.
Yeah. So a thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I liked this too.
And I would, though. Did you read the preview?
No, I did not read the preview.
It had a Ninjak preview in the back. Ninjak
preview.
I really like the opening, the first few pages about the brothers and kind of like the cataclysm that came.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that in the original?
Don't remember, but I'm going to go revisit the original now that I got the digital copies on my iPad.
Yeah.
The iPad is very convenient, like, if you're just, especially on trips and stuff, just to read. And I'll have all the Archer and Armstrongs there. Plus, I have the hardcover.
I have the hardcover.
Yeah, so I have that hardcover, and then they're releasing the Bloodshot hardcover as well.
That'll be the third one, right? Because they have a Harbinger.
I just don't think they're going to make it because, man, their sales are already starting to suck. It's like they start off really well with number one, and then it just shoots the hell down.
Maybe they'll have a new life in the digital world or something.
Yeah, that's the one thing we don't have insight to. And I take advantage of those 99-cent sales, and I'm triple dipping with the Valiant. So I'm like not just double dipping. I was like, and quadruple dipping on Archer and Armstrong because I got the digital, I got the paper, and I got the hardcover.
Yeah, you're beating me. I only triple dipped on it. And then I'll get the trade, so I'll eventually quadruple dip.
And I might do that. I might do that when the hard. Yeah, I was like. I like Archer and Armstrong well enough to do that. But you can get the new copy for 99 cents. You could get they don't have like all the latest issues, but you could get like number one of XO, number one of Bloodshot, number one of Archer and Armstrong, and number one of Harbinger for 99 cents. That's a good way to try it. Except it'll be over by the time we air this. You just missed it. Sorry.
Do they still have the Image number ones on sale, or is that over?
Oh shit! Did you not get that?
For the free? No, I did. I was just curious.
Oh, that is over. But that
weekend,
that one was insane because it wasn't just 99 cents; it was free.
It was free.
It was like 17 issues of free comics.
All the number ones.
Yeah.
Number ones.
And they sold me on Dancer because I read Dancer number one and I purchased number two and number three for I think it was $1.99.
I haven't checked that one out yet.
But I didn't get number four because it was $2.99. I'm waiting for the price to drop. Yeah. So that one I enjoyed Dancer. Dancer's about like an assassin that's protecting actually like a famous ballerina type dancer. And he's actually in a relationship with her and he's an older guy. He's like, I would say 40 or so.
So it's the bodyguard?
Yeah. It's like the bodyguard, except the weird catch is he's protecting her from himself because there's like some time anomaly or clone anomaly where his own clone is coming after to kill her, to kill him. it's pretty cool because it's like fighting himself. And the thing I think they execute really well is, you know how in the issues you want to have like a little bit of some hook to make you want to come back to the next issue? It does a really good job of that because there's always like a little bit of a change or something that changes the pace, and then you want to find out what the next issue is. So yeah, I'd recommend Dancer number one, and I got the first issue for free, so it still might be for free. I don't know, but I don't see their little banner. You know how they had the banner on Comixology?
Yeah. Like,
Image number ones, and they had a lot. They had Alpha Girl. I mean, I was already buying the paper copy of Alpha Girl, but I still download the digital copy. But I love that one. That one's just about a perfume company that developed.
This one, I didn't like that one.
You didn't like that? Oh, I just love the art.
I didn't like the writing.
It was like, I enjoyed it. It was very up my alley.
Maybe it was too tongue-in-cheek for me.
Maybe that's why I liked it.
I like my post-apocalyptic serious.
Yeah, I'd agree. This one had like a humorous side to it because it affected only women, and it was like the Catwoman movie, but only done good. The cosmetic company caused a lot of the women to go kind of haywire and turn into these zombie monsters. And there's this one girl that's like a rebel that is fighting them. But they kept it didn't do anything to the guys except the women are killing all the dudes. No Place Like Home was another free one that I would recommend. I'm reading that in paper copy. I don't know if you got a chance to read that one yet, Bill.
I I read that one on the number one when it came out.
Oh yeah, we talked about it.
Yeah. How is that going? You read more than, or are you reading that?
Read number one and two, and I have three and four, I think. But I just get too much. That's why it's hard for me to keep caught up. But I love to, so with some of the Image books, and you could just read in one sitting. They read really well. Like I read Dancer 1-3, and I liked it.
Yeah, a lot of the Image ones are, or maybe all of the Image, or the bulk of the Image ones are written as like shorter stories, arcs. So they read better. They typically read better.
The one I was really curious to see if you guys read, because you guys both like Orkstein, was
Godzilla.
Godzilla, the Half Century War.
I read it.
And what did you think?
What is that? I give it 4 out of 5.
I liked it.
I liked the art more than the story.
Yep.
But I think that the story is, I see where he's going with it, so I think it'll get better. Like telling the story of this guy and his relationship with Godzilla. Because it seems like he's planning out, like, it stars this young 30-something, I think he was, year old Japanese army guy. And they show his first encounter with Godzilla, and then I think they're going to show like his, over his life, his encounters with Godzilla, so his relationship with the monsters. At least that's how I took it.
Yeah, I thought he had a manga-esque art style in this.
I think it is a James Stokoe art style.
I think it looks just like Orkstein, and
really the people, like Sullivan Sluggers. The monster, I could say, looks like him, but... Well, I haven't read Sullivan Sluggers, so...
Well, I just looked at the artwork they put out for it.
What's the premise of that?
Evil baseball stuff.
I think it's baseball players that turn into monsters.
Oh.
I don't know. Something like that.
Has that been released in paper format, or is it just a Kickstarter?
No, that's just Kickstarter. Yeah.
Yeah, it hasn't come out yet. But Stokoe did Wonton Soup first, and it had a similar style.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's definitely manga-influenced. I mean, that's one of his big...
And I think that's why I didn't like the art style. But I also didn't care for the story. But it wasn't... It's not that it's a bad book. Like, I think a Stokoe fan will love this, right? Like, the art?
Yeah, the art was awesome.
Yeah.
The colors are awesome. So, I love his color work.
So if you're a fan, I think you're going to like this book. But... I have stuff to compare to me, and I'd rather read the Godzilla ongoing.
Yeah, that's the difference. I'm not reading the other Godzilla series, so I have nothing
I read an issue of that one, and it didn't pull me in.
Yeah, I find it more interesting when they have in-depth, like the first issue of the Godzilla ongoing, they've had two ongoings. One was 12 issues, like Kingdom of the Monsters. And that one was really good, but it petered out towards the end. In other words, it started off, it had Eric Powell and another scripter doing it. And I can't remember who did the art. And I thought the first 6 issues were, you know, absolutely great. Like total destruction and chaos, but yet there was a lot there focusing on individuals throughout the books. And then this new series started off really cool because it showed a group of individuals, a handful of 4 individuals, and how the monsters destroyed people they loved. Like it gave all that backstory. And then they were united as a team and to kill the monsters. And the interesting thing is they came up with a weapon that it's like a headache weapon. It's weird. It gives the monsters a headache. So it like doesn't hurt the monster, but it gives them like a migraine, which they can't really concentrate much. And they kind of use the weapon to guide them into some kind of trap of some sort. And the interesting thing about that is they're like mercenaries. In other words, they're going to charge They're like, okay, for $50 billion, we'll do this. We'll take out Rodan for you. And they've been successful, like taking out that huge spider. Like there actually are creatures from the movies in these things.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch a lot of Godzilla movies, just like the main one. I was more of a King Kong fan, but there's one called Argurius, and then Rodan. Rodan, I remember.
Right, he's and a big one.
Yeah, the giant tarantula. I can't remember what his name is, but they deal with him.
So they brought in all the.
Yeah.
All the monsters.
But it's such a cool team. It's like one guy lost. He was gay and they were getting married and he really loved this dude. And he like, I can't remember if it was Godzilla or another. I think it was the spider destroyed the church and his lover. And he was really pissed, but he was an ex-mercenary. And then one guy lost his sister. I think it was a sister. And then he lost another girl later on, his daughter, to Godzilla. So he's got a really, like, he wants to kill Godzilla. And each one has a vendetta against, you know, one of the monsters. So it makes them an interesting team. But that one's by Straczynski, and this guy Gain, I really like. His name is Simon Gain, and he's got more of an art style that I like. Not to say Stoko is bad for me. I just
No, you're not a big fan of his.
Well, I think I wouldn't mind the art. You know what I mean? I think the art could grow on me. I really do, because it's like Micah said. It's maybe manga influence, but it's Stoko art. You could see that it's not totally manga.
And there is less
like using. I don't think the orc stain was so fucking weird that I could tell what art style that was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was my only experience. Is I think Image had that number ones for free again like last year, and that's where I got Orc Stain number one. And that was just a little too weird and disgusting. I mean, there are popping pustules and all this, and then there's nut sacks and dicks that they're using for money, and I was like, yeah. It is a colorful book, I'll give you that. It pops when you read it.
Mm-hmm.
But of the Godzilla stories, because I'm more of a story freak, I think the people that like more Godzilla, like instead of people or the background of people, will like Half Century War more, because it's almost like something that would happen in a movie. You know, they're in a Sherman tank, and there's two people. One is the commander of the tank, and then one is, you know, driving the tank and launching. Seems like the one main character is just outside the tank telling.
Just sitting on it. I know.
The other guy's doing all the fucking work. And he's like, what, do you want me to go back and fight some more monsters? It's like, fuck no. So I have two more issues on that before I decide if I'm going to continue on that one. But I'm loving the other one. And I liked Kingdom of the Monsters until the very end. And I didn't check out Godzilla Legends, but Godzilla is like a property where I was like, oh yeah, I've seen them as a kid and I don't really care about. Mm-hmm. But then I started to read the Godzilla Essentials, and I liked that Marvel run. It was kind of interesting. And then I got into these. This one had an interesting article in the back about it was from Christos Gage, you know, Avengers Academy and mm-hmm. a couple other things. He basically said love and giant lizards, and he attributed his marriage to Godzilla, and it was a very interesting article.
That's cool.
Yeah, because his girlfriend let's see what. The comic that, you know, drove you into comics and you absolutely love, like, Godzilla was that for him. Because that was the one that he first collected. In other words, he didn't collect any other comics, but he made sure he had every issue of Godzilla.
Yeah, that was his gateway.
That was his gateway drug. And so it always meant something special to him. And then when he met his girlfriend, she bought him like a $400 cover to Godzilla number 10.
Nice.
And he's like, not to say that that's the one incident or the one thing that drove them to get married, but you know, it was kind of special to him because he loved, you know, Godzilla, and he still owns all his copies. And there's a picture in here of a Godzilla cover with, it's like totally trashed, you know, like he has all his originals and you can tell they're well read.
That he read them as a kid. Yes.
Back pocket and shit like that. Yeah. Totally trashed. He says since then he's has all his originals, but he's replaced them with good copies. But that was an interesting article.
He's not doing anything with the new stuff, though, is he?
Crystal Skage? No, that was just an article that he chose to send to IDW because I guess he liked it.
Because he likes the new stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he wrote one, I'd be tempted to get it.
And Vince B was recently talking about another one on 11 O'Clock Comics that I didn't read, which was called Legends, Godzilla Legends. And I think there were one-shots about each monster. It's out on trade now. So that one might be something to check out. If I see it in Baltimore, I'll definitely buy it. But, you know, with IDWs and images and stuff like that, you don't always find. If it's Marvel, I guarantee you'll find it in the $5 bin.
Right.
But these other ones, it's hit or miss.
You luck out. Sometimes you can find IDW stuff.
So what are some of the other books you guys have read?
Micah, you got anything?
Oh, sure. I read, I read a couple of issues of, I think, the Amazing Spider-Man annuals. I read, I actually don't know what numbers they are. I just know what years they came out. From 86 to 88, I was reading. Number 20, 21, and 22. All right, in the first issue, Spider-Man is... All right, first thing first. These stories, old books are awesome because they try to cram as much story as possible, even at the expense of making any sense. And so, there's like three or four stories going on at a time in each of these annuals. They have like 40-some pages, but... that still feels like there's not enough time for them to actually explain what the hell is going on ever. So, in this first one, it takes place in the year, I think, 2015 or 2020. Like, the story's about Iron Man of 2020, but the story takes place before 2020, so I don't even know what's going on. And somehow, it's not Tony Stark, it's some dude named Arno Stark, who I've never heard of in my entire life. Who maybe only existed in one story. It seems like we're supposed to know who he is, because the cover says he's back. But I swear I've never heard of this dude in my life. So
I think I may have read something with him recently.
Right, recently?
Yeah, with Matt Fractions.
Was he in Iron Age?
I missed it. God, I don't remember because he was such a. He wasn't in it for long, but I kind of felt the same way. That you did. I remember hearing, maybe it wasn't the same Stark, but it was somebody, and I was like, yeah. I don't remember that person. And I had the same reaction, but a different book. Am I supposed to know this guy?
Yeah, I don't know if he's a descendant of Tony Stark, because he had to make money to buy the company from Stark's, from Tony's estate. Like, he didn't actually own the company in this book. Oh, he owns it now, but he had to buy it off of him, which is weird. If he was a Stark, I figured he might have gotten it inherited, but I guess not. But, so, like, the story starts out, and this dude is doing, like, the awesome businessman thing, and he's trying to be Time Person of the Year, and he's invented a time machine to work with the Iron Man suit. But they're doing the whole story where he's successful businessman and super popular and famous, but has no time for his wife and kid. And they're very sad that he doesn't spend time with them. And they're all like, oh, I wish you would just spend time with us. And he's all, but I'm a businessman. I have to make business deals and be a business person and all that kind of stuff. So he's running around being obnoxious. And that story goes on. Like, that's like the entire story. Also, there's a dude with like a cyborg eye who's gonna blow everything up, but like he seriously exists for like 3 pages in the entire book. And so anyway, Iron Man ends up running into like going hitting a time machine and going back in time to fight Black Suit Spider-Man. And this is, when did Secret Wars happen?
Man, I don't remember the date. It was
early 80s, right?
It's early 80s. And when did Venom happen?
Which one, the costume or Venom?
When did the costume go from being a costume to making Peter Parker go crazy?
Oh, that was Secret Wars.
Okay.
I mean, Secret Wars is where the costume came out of. And later on, that's that costume. It was always a symbionte. Symbiote.
Okay, but like apparently he wore this costume for years before they decided that it was they're like, actually the costume is bad. Like, this is interesting because like overreading these annuals, it's just funny that like he had this costume for a long time. So long, even though they make jokes about like how he's never going to go back to the old red and blue costume. And I was just thinking about how nowadays, like, they couldn't do that kind of costume change, like this drastic of a costume change for that long without it like reverting immediately back to the like original thing. It's just interesting.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was like if they really made a big deal that it was a symbionte.
Nope.
If it was alive, but I got the impression when reading Secret Wars, I had to thumb through that again because I think I have the hardcover somewhere. But I think that they made it sound like it was alive, but they never took advantage of it or made it like a living, like it was eaten away at his mind. I remember reading the issues where he was like going out at night and he didn't even know he was going out at night, you know?
Yeah.
Like, fighting criminals, and he's like, what the fuck? I'm exhausted. You know, this thing's killing me.
Right, but as it stands now, like, well, like by now, I mean 1985, 86, and so on. Peter Parker is it's just a suit. Like, it's basically just a suit. He wears it all the time, but that's just because he always wears his Spider-Man outfit all the time. So,
Do you actually see him put it on, or does it actually like morph over him?
No, he's either wearing it or he's not. There's never a costume change in these books.
No transition.
There's no transition. Like, there's a page where he's wearing it and there's a page where he's not. I think the most you get is he never takes the mask off. It's just on or it's not on. It's really strange. Like, there's never a scene of him like pulling the mask down or it like morphing up his face. So I have no idea. But anyway, this is in this weird time in Spider-Man's life where, like, him and MJ are, like, dating and things are starting to get serious. And he's still, like, super broke. And they're playing up, like, the big class differences because MJ hangs out with rich people. And that makes Spider-Man sad. But Spider-Man won't do anything about it. Like, you know, go get a real job. And like he makes like $20 at the newspaper and comes home and like throws up like wants to throw a party, and MJ's like, yeah, I just made a bajillion dollars doing this like random like show thing that she has to go do. And Peter Parker like makes the amazing sad face that he does all the time whenever Mary Jane makes more money than he does. Like, he's like this, like the entire, like for all these annuals, he basically spends a good 80% of the book being depressed. Like, he's just sad.
And I'd be happy. I'm like a sugar mama. Yeah.
I never understood why he wasn't just like, all right, I can devote my life to crime fighting or something, or doing other things, like going to do children's parties or whatever he wants to do.
At this time, did she know he was Spider-Man?
Yeah, she knows.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can, like, it's weird because I'm only reading the annuals. I'm not reading like each of the, like, all the issues in between. What you get is this thing where, in one annual, she hates that he's Spider-Man and it makes her uncomfortable and she's sad. And then the next one you read, she's like, I love that you're Spider-Man. It's awesome. And it's like, ah, because I missed a whole year worth of books. And back then they pounded shit ton more stories into these things.
Who's the creative teams on that book?
Let's look. In this one, it is... Why won't you give me...
McElhaney?
They're not going to tell me, are they?
I wonder if it's McElhaney years. But annuals have always not... They've always...
The annuals are always someone else.
Well, not the Iron Man one?
Yeah.
It's like Ken McDonald. The famous Ken McDonald.
Oh, why didn't I know that? I should have known that.
Where did you even find this? It's not because it's not in the book.
Bill just remembered that because he's famous.
I love Ken McDonald's work.
He's done so many things that you remember. Like the issue of Amazing Spider-Man.
If Ken McDonald was still around, Bill would buy the single issues. He wouldn't wait for trade. That's how much he likes Ken McDonald.
Okay, so partway through this, like, I don't know. I'm like, there's a lot of things that I'm totally missing from not reading like Amazing Spider-Man right now, or you know, all the issues in the '80s that I don't actually own. But there's some like little kid who just follows Peter Parker around everywhere he goes and like mimics Peter, and it's really creepy. And I don't have any idea what's going on. Like, not even the smallest clue. Like, they don't explain it at all. Like, he just shows up like in certain panels, and then he gets kidnapped by a villain who I've never heard of, and I don't think they exist after this. They got another one-issue villain. It's so strange. Like, this book doesn't make... I'm reading through it now to look at the panel so I can remember some of it, and it doesn't make any sense. Like, it really weird book. And then Iron Man shows up in the middle of it and starts fighting the villain, and then I think he's going to, like, autograph the kid's face, but Spider-Man stops him.
Where did you get Ken McDonald? Because I don't... You said Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 20, right?
Yeah.
Ken McDonald, he did Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 20 and Dazzler number 30.
I see two names next to that. Fred Schiller and Ken McDonald.
Yeah, it says based on a story by... Whatever the first guy.
And the artist I haven't even heard of. It's Mark Beckham.
They brought out for these annuals. They were only using the best they had around.
Now I have heard of the editor, James Owsley. That's Christopher Priest, and Jim Shooter.
Okay.
So I've heard of those guys. Bob Wycheck, I've heard of him too. He was the inker.
Yeah.
Wycheck.
He did a lot back then.
Wow.
But you actually have the death of the Blizzard in issue 20.
Oh, really? That's like what that guy is?
Collector's item. Right now, that book is worth, in mint condition, $4.75. You're picked like a death of the Blizzard.
I'm sitting on a gold mine. I never even knew it. Yeah, so Iron Man shows up and like... He's from the future, and he's being sort of a dick, and then he fights Spider-Man for absolutely no reason. Cause all he was going to do was autograph this kid's face with, like, a boom tube or something.
Yeah, the cover looks insane.
He's, like, super menacing on it. Yeah, and so Spider-Man kicks the shit out of the dude. Like, seriously, just, like, punches the dude's armor all the way off almost. And then apparently hit him super hard, and it sent him back to the future, and then his whole world...
Wait, what?
And then there was a DeLorean, and Doc Brown was like, you got to go back. And
I remember that crossover.
But yeah, no, Spider-Man seriously just like for three pages of 80s comic just beats the shit out of this guy. Like just seriously just waylays him over and over again, and metal starts flying off of this dude's thing, right? And then out of nowhere, he phases out of this and goes to the future, and... When you get to the future, you see that everything exploded, and there's just like this 50-mile radius of nothing because it all got blown up. Oh, here we go. At the very last page, based on an original story by Fred Schiller, script by Ken McDonald, pencils by Mark Beecham, inks by Bob. I can't read these names.
Wycheck. Wycheck. Yeah.
See, Jim. Wow, these names are really. Like blurry on this awesome newsprint. I think some dude named Bob Sharon did the colors, and James E. Owsley did the editing.
See, I'm always cautious about annuals. Like,
oh, they're not any good, dude.
Well, yeah. Well, sometimes there's some great ones, like those Elseworlds ones that DC did. Well, yeah. Those are freaking awesome, and I love like Armageddon 2001. But there's a lot of really like lame ones. Like, I really didn't like even recently the Fantastic Four annual that Alan Davis did. I thought that was a disaster.
Well,
if you love his art, you're gonna say, "Well, I like it because of the art." But I the story to me just
have the current ones been in continuity, or are they?
Yeah.
These annuals, are in continuity as well.
Yeah, they're supposedly all in continuity. Well, this one was in the future, so they could get away with a lot of shit, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was just a random Iron Man who wasn't Iron Man, and they never even mentioned him. Like, I guess Tony is dead. I don't know what's going on in the future. I have no idea where to find, because they never tell you, like, in the little bubbles, like Arno Stark first appeared in Iron Man Annual number 17 or whatever. They never do that for the character. So
they probably figure he's insignificant.
Yep, they don't care.
So you read 21 too?
Absolutely. This is where Spider-Man gets married.
Yes, this is the shit. I mean, this is
that was classic.
Yes, this is Jim Shooter and David Michelinie with art by Paul Ryan and inkers Vince Coletta, which I hear a lot of people shit on that guy.
For what he did to Kirby's art?
Yeah, well, what he did to anybody's art.
Well, this one I can't notice because newsprint is awesome. So, yeah, this one, see, I can tell you who did it because the names are right there on the first page of the book as opposed to the last one where they're on the very last page of the book. God, jackasses. You know why? Because they didn't know who any of those people were. So, Ken McDonald, they didn't want to put him on the front.
They want people to put it back on the shelf.
Back on the day, that was okay to have it on the first or last, I thought. But now you get it in the middle of the fucking book.
Yes.
Fuck are the credits?
Yeah, no. Like, I remember when you guys were doing like the DC stuff and you guys were trying to figure out like who did half the – like you knew who did them, but like you would look for the credits and then they would be like – four or five pages into the book, and you're like, what is this?
Yeah, it was hard. In other words, you could read them off the cover, but if it wasn't a name like Johns or something, you're like, well, who is this new guy?
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, I'll go find it. And then you're like searching the book for at least and they're like some obscure, like somebody's getting punched in the face and hitting a brick and the names are in the brick. And you have to look.
Okay, it's to find brick. The right brick.
It's colored in red and with black ink, so it's really hard to see.
Yeah, that stuff is awful. Like if I was a creator and that's how my credits are gonna, I don't know how happy I'd be about that. Like, hey, can we put my credits somewhere where people might actually be able to see my name? I guess not. Oh, look. Vice President nominee Paul Ryan did the pencils for this issue. So
yeah. And he also ran like under a minute.
Yeah. I guess if you have a extraordinarily boring name like that, you can do a lot of things. There's probably not a lot of Vince Coletta's running around, so he's not going to get confused for anybody else.
I'm going to start looking for Vince Coletta because I want to understand the hate. I want to see it like before and after.
I don't understand it in this book because everything looks fine to me, and I don't know if Paul Ryan did such awesome pencils that.
Well, this is a different era too.
Yeah,
I think back in the day, he was doing like inking like whatever 20 books a week or whatever, and because he was known for his speed, right? I think that's his big thing. He was known for his speed, so he could crank out the inks. But and back then, comics weren't. I mean, they were just made to
entertain.
Be sold quickly and thrown in the garbage.
Yep.
They weren't, so it didn't really matter back then.
To like pour over. So yeah. So this is where they get married, but they don't get married. Like, this issue is not about the wedding for the first half of the book. Initially, some dudes break out of jail, and there's like a hit on this like police van, and it's Electro. And so Spider-Man has to stop Electro and his thugs for like the first 6 or 7 pages of the book. Longer. First 10, 12 pages of the book, right? is that. And then Spider-Man comes. Here we go. It is a suit. This is the only issue I've ever seen Spider-Man with this black. He's taking it off like it's a shirt. So, is he still wearing the black suit? And he wears, oh God, he rips the, he's wearing this awesome shirt where the sleeves are ripped off of it. Like he, his guns are too big to be contained by petty t-shirts. So he had to rip the sleeves off of it.
Hey Micah, just, was there a time, and maybe I'm just not thinking right about Spider-Man history, but was there a time where he got rid of the Venom, you know, the Symbionte, and then still wore the black costume?
Maybe that did happen. Maybe that's why it's not so big a deal.
So he's like, I like that black costume. I'm going to make my own.
So,
I mean, it's possible because Spider-Man does weird things and they like the suit.
What I really need to do is this book's date. I got to find out what its date is. Does it have it in the book? Like
this one? This
yeah.
is 87.
1987? Well, did it give a month?
No.
Hey, I graduated in 1987. That's awesome.
I was 1 year old.
So
an annual number 21, no, number 2187. It doesn't give me. I'm looking to see if in the copyright information there's a.
I think you know what I want to do now is I want to look up the first appearance of Venom, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because that will. Yeah, I'm gonna go backwards.
I will point out one thing about this annual. I remember that I purchased both covers.
Oh, the direct market? Yeah, there's two covers.
One had Peter Parker on the cover, and one had him in his Spider-Man costume.
Oh, okay. This one, I have the cover with Spider-Man and MJ, and like.
Yeah, the same cover, except on the other one, instead of.
Oh, okay. It's Peter Parker.
So.
Gotcha. On this cover, there is false advertising.
I double dipped for the cover.
I don't think you ever see Wolverine or Daredevil or Human Torch in this book. Unless they're in like the wedding picture, which there's like 1,000 characters, they're all really tiny, so I can't tell who's.
Oh, who. Actually, I'm looking at the cover again. I was wrong. I'm wrong. There's another difference in the background of the one who's in a Spider-Man costume. It shows superheroes in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one, it just shows regular human people.
Oh,
his friends.
Are they the superheroes who are just not in costume, or are they like Robbie and Jameson and Flash and Harry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All those guys.
Aunt
May. No,
Spider-Man fights the Electro forever, and then he runs home to put on his cutoff T-shirt, and then he proceeds to spend the next 15 pages being jealous of MJ. Like,
okay.
It's all that happens.
Okay, so Micah, he's wearing a black costume now.
Okay.
Because Venom first appeared in 298.
Okay, and that was in 80.
That was in 1988 of March.
So he'd already gone through.
I think that's the shitty appearance, like where he appears in the back panel. You know, Brock is, here's his first appearance, and he's like in the background as Venom, and it's in one panel. Kind of like they did Wolverine, like Wolverine's first appearance.
Right.
Wolverine's first appearance is in the Wendigo issue, and it's actually of less value than the one of his first full appearance, which has the whole, you know, Wolverine versus the Hulk.
Right.
Yeah. But did he have the cover on his first appearance or not?
The cover actually had it was called Chance Encounter, and it had some guy shooting Spider-Man in the it actually has a Todd McFarlane cover. This was the Michelini McFarlane years. No, he wasn't on the cover on the next issue, so that was 298. My database is acting slow. I need to upgrade to the new version because they increased the speed.
Improved the performance?
Yes, that's one of the big deals about the new version. So 299 is the first full appearance of Venom, but 298 introduced him. So you were in 87, so...
That's pre-Venom.
Pre-Venom.
But probably post, like, Freak Out.
Well, that actually means that that was Venom, but he was treating it like a shirt.
Yeah, he just spit on my shirt.
So they probably like retcon that or something. It's like
probably retcon like the entire past 3 years. Actually, he was going mad. The reason he was so mopey is because of the Venom suit, not because he's just a jealous dude who can't handle his girlfriend driving a Ferrari.
Yeah.
So this whole issue, there's some creeper dude who I don't know. His name is Bruce. I don't know who it's supposed to be. But he, like, buys MJ a Ferrari, gives her plane tickets to Paris so that she won't get married to Peter Parker. Like, she, like...
Oh, I wonder if that was the stalker fucker. Like, they...
Oh.
Well, back in the day, they had that one guy that was stalking MJ. I remember. It was creepy as hell.
Maybe it is that dude.
Maybe
but, like,
it is him.
Yeah, she's like he just buys her a Ferrari.
Yeah, like in Transformers, like that guy who bought her that car. Do you remember in the?
Oh yeah. Yeah, like he bought her a Ferrari, and he's like, "Don't worry, I have another Ferrari, so you can keep this one." And he bought her plane tickets to Paris, and she has a limo. And then there's a random ass recap of Spider-Man's life, and right in the middle of it, like there's the origin story. And the whole thing with the burglar guy who runs away from him and the cop and all that stuff. And shooting Uncle Ben. And then just Gwen Stacy and the Goblin, and he's sad. So after he spends like the first part of this wedding story getting sad about MJ like having a Ferrari and stuff, there's the second half thinking that like, man, I really love Gwen Stacy way more than I love MJ. But she's dead and that makes me sad. And then he has a nightmare about it, too. Like, the whole thing is so weird. Like, he has, like, a full-on, like, I shouldn't get married nightmare because Gwen Stacy comes back from the dead. But then MJ says it's okay. But then all the enemies try to kill everyone. Like, and it's such really strange.
This is awesome. You're talking about two comics that I don't own.
You don't own these?
I don't own them. Yeah. I was looking at my database, and I don't own them.
Four-something dollars.
I guess these were the years where I was like, annuals are shit. I'm not going to buy them.
You didn't get the wedding one?
I don't have the wedding issue.
How did you not have the wedding issue?
But I'm going to have to look for it in Baltimore. Because I cannot have, you know, missing the wedding issue.
Dude, it's
how
so...
How did you not get that?
It's so weird.
I guess I just decided to pick up Annual 22 because it had Speedball, so I don't know.
Oh, dude, I read that one too. That is
Yeah, that's the first.
That kid's power basically is he gets like punched in the face and then starts bouncing around.
Mike is in the money because he's got like the death of the Blizzard. I like the Amazing Spider-Man wedding and the first appearance of Speedball. Okay.
I am just rolling in dough over here. These collectively are worth $20.
That's worth $4.50 too, Micah.
Awesome.
And if you have Peter Parker on the cover versus Spider-Man, it's worth $8.
Oh no, I only have lowly Spider-Man on the cover.
So yeah, you're in the dough, man.
I am over here.
And this is a conservative database. This isn't this database is like nowhere near Overstreet.
What you
like,
could actually get?
If you looked on Overstreet, it would probably be
$17.
It would probably be at least 16, I bet.
Let me look at eBay to see what the going rate is for Amazing Spider-Man Annual. Which one is this? 21. 21 is the wedding, right?
Yeah.
Mike, you must have that. You probably just didn't enter it in your database.
No, it's not possible. It's not possible.
I'm selling right now.
I'm missing annuals 18 through 21, and then I have 22 all the way through 38, and then I stopped getting annuals again.
Oh, you didn't get 39?
Yeah.
You didn't get
You're just like anti-annuals, huh? I'm not.
Well, I've always been in and out of annuals because I'm like, even now, I'm like, why the fuck did this Alan Davis Fantastic Four suck? And I'm like, you're paying $4.99 for a story that's fucked up, and I don't like Marvel annuals. I mean,
I don't like most annuals are awesome like as time capsules because I can read these stories.
Well, if you go back to the 12-cent days or the 20-cent days, annuals were a big fucking deal, right?
They were double stories.
They were like, wow, this story's awesome, and you'd have some key shit. But I guess you have, in the ones that I missed. You had the wedding and the death of the blizzard. Fuck.
Speedball.
And the first appearance of Speedball. Yeah, he has Speedball.
I have that one too.
Speedball, have you read that recently? He's a completely useless, like, he's completely useless.
Well, he became Penance.
Right. No, he becomes...
Yeah. And that was fucking weird because, you know, he blamed himself for the whole blowing up of the kid's school and shit.
Well, that was that whole Civil War thing, right?
Yeah, so he had the spikes in him, so he self pain and it was
so
like...
he was a part of the New Warriors, right? That's the same, Speedball.
Yeah. Then he became Speedball again, and it seemed more like the Speedball we know, except he was trying to redeem himself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was created by Steve Ditko, so, I mean, shit. You're in the dough, man.
All right.
Those were in the dime box. Shit.
I think I might have paid a quarter for some of those, so.
Oh, okay.
not quite the amazing, awesome feat.
Oh, Speedball is the backup story?
Yeah.
No, there is no backup story, dude. See, you forget what time this is happening. There is no backup story. There's just 8 stories happening at once. So what happens is Peter Parker is Spider-Man stops a drug, like he stops like this drug thing, right? And he tells a cop about it. In the most thickest fashion of all time, by the way. Apparently on his belt there's a light that makes like a bat signal.
That's fucking awesome, dude. I used to have one of those belts.
Right, walking down the street, minding his own business, just, you know, being whatever. On a light, standing on a light pole, and just like standing there, all arms akimbo, and flashing his like belt light onto the cop.
Yeah, that's like the bat light. Except the bat light serves a purpose, right? It's to notify, hey, Batman, shit's happening. Come over here. His spider light is to strike fear. It's like, I got you in my light. You're gonna be fucked up.
Tell the cop that he stopped some criminals. That's all he wanted to do. So he flashed the spotlight on the dude, and like, but it turns out that somebody had killed everybody that Spider-Man had tied up. So now the police want him for murder because he just killed like 7 people. Also, in every issue I've read, MJ has not worn a pair of pants once, because she doesn't believe in pants, which is cool.
You know, back then we didn't have cell phones, so you had to have some method of communication. So flashing lights on your belt was a big thing.
Yeah. And so Matt Murdock decides that he's going to handle this case and clear Spider-Man's name.
This is awesome, too, because it's the Evolutionary War Part 5.
Oh, is that what's happening at the end of this book?
Mother.
I don't know what's happening, because the High Evolutionary is like making a cow into a humanoid cow.
This is fucking awesome. This is the origin of the High Evolutionary in this book.
Okay, now this is chapter 6 of the High Evolutionary story. I don't have chapters 1 through 5. I don't have what happens after this.
Yeah.
Is this dude turning a cow from a cow into a humanoid cow?
There you go.
Confused and sad because she's now like, but she can't talk English yet. She just says moo with the question mark at the end of it.
Isn't that the cow, like the cow that took care of Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver back in the day?
I mean,
because there was Agatha Harkness or whatever, but I think the cow was like the nursemaid. I think she used to carry around the, you know, Magneto's kids like in her arms.
Oh, if that happened, that would
maybe she breastfed them too. I don't
know what. That would make sense because this is a retcon, because this story is happening in 1932. So the High Evolutionary is turning the cow into a humanoid cow in the 30s, which means that she would be fully functioning as a humanoid cow thing by the time Magneto had kids. So probably yes.
Man, I need to read more old issues, man. This is fucking awesome.
Like, it's so... But the thing is, I don't have anything that's leading up to it. So I don't even... And it doesn't tell me where I can get the other... See, if you're going to have editor boxes, tell me where I can find the first 5 damn issues of the High Evolutionary storyline. Because they're just at the end of the Spider-Man annual.
It looks like it was in all the annuals that year.
Okay, so I have to go find... Like, I guess Iron Man and the X-Men and other stuff, I guess.
But you had some big names on art, too. You had Mark Bagley, who's kind of big now. I mean, he did the whole Ultimate Spider-Man run.
Yep.
And I just read Into the Vault, The Defenders. And he drew that issue, and it was the shit. I mean, the book kind of was like just a regular Defender story, but the art right. he drew was awesome.
Bakley's good. This is written by Tom DeFalco. Oh, wait, no, it's idea by Tom DeFalco, and the story by David
Michelini.
Michelini. Yeah.
He's the man. I love...
Oh, Mike Esposito did some of the art, too.
Steve Ditko, Roger Stern, and Mark Grenwald. Mark Grenwald was the shit in the Captain America days. He was fucking awesome. Squadron Supreme, and I mean, these are some big ass names.
Mm-hmm. Kingpin broke a dude in this book. Like, he just squeezed a dude in the middle of his body and like yeah. smashed him.
You even have Ron Lim art in there, which I remember he was really big back in the day for Silver Surfer. You know, when they relaunched the Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
Was it the 90s or the 80s? I can't remember. Late 80s, maybe.
Late 80s, yeah.
I think I have some of those issues.
Man.
Yeah. This is where the Purifiers show, like the robots that just destroy everything. Like Kingpin made robots that kill stuff and then framed Spider-Man for it, but then didn't frame Spider-Man. They framed some other dude. And Kingpin, there's a scene where Kingpin picks a guy up, squeezes him, like, by his two sides, and dude just like his head like just explodes sort of, and then he's passed out dead. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Speedball sees all of it in his Speedball costume. Okay, what's great about Speedball is that he's dressed as a regular kid, and then he gets pushed down to the ground or slammed into a wall, and when he bounces back up, he's already in costume. Like this, his powers, like he has no control over turning in costume.
It's such a weird shit. I mean, he's like bouncing all over his shit with little balls around him.
It looks like he's on drugs. Like the way they draw it, it looks like he's just constant. Like nothing is really happening. He's on drugs and imagining all of it happening because like there's like they try to look like little drug circles all around his face and stuff.
What is his big deal back in the day though? Is he got so much like kinetic energy? He like hits people and
they don't explain anything. They all they tell you is that when he impacts things, he can't stop until he grounds himself.
So you can just say he's like a glorified bouncing boy?
Yes.
It's good if you're like in a trapped room with some bad guys.
He's learning how to control it.
Bounce off the walls.
Yeah, but he's bouncing. Is he hitting him at any kind of impact that will knock him out? That's what I'm trying to get at. Okay. Yeah.
He hits him. He learns physics in his own head to hit the right angle so that he can hit people and knock them out. Yeah.
It's like bouncing boy. What do the little dots do, Micah? You know how he's got like balls all around him or stuff?
Those are to show you that he's actually on drugs and this is not really happening.
Oh, okay.
Does it throw those balls?
Like they just show up all over his face and stuff. I think he's just on drugs. He's not actually a superhero. This is like postmodernism before they figured out what that was.
I'm bouncing off the walls.
Yeah, like he's just like there's this panel. I need to like save this. I need to take a picture of it.
And then he went clean.
And yeah, he went clean crashed, and shitty.
And then wanted to self abuse.
Yeah, and blew up a city. And then went turned on spikes and stuff, or school, and then turned on spikes.
Wait, how did he become Speedball?
He was punched in the face, and then he became Speedball.
That's awesome. That's an awesome origin story.
They don't explain it.
I didn't realize I had this power until I was punched in the face.
Like, there's a group of, like, young punks who come up behind him, and just, they're going to rob him.
Yeah.
How possibly break some bones. No, they're going to break some bones, and then if he complains too much, they're going to rob him. Like, the plan isn't to rob him. The plan is just to beat the kid up. Because honestly, he's like this little preppy kid whose mom like works in the theater. He looks like somebody who needs to get beat up once in his life. But they throw him to the ground, and when he hits the ground, he turns right into Speedball and starts bouncing all over the place. And he can't stop. And then, like, the side story...
So they didn't show any, like, thing before that? Like, he accidentally fell in a bath of chemicals or...
Nothing.
Sweet. That is like awesome. I
No, the storytelling is they don't care at all. They just like, you know,
I have to say is fuck yeah. That is an origin story that doesn't fucking waste any pages. You get punched in the face and you're a superhero.
Just boom, Speedball. And so in one scene, this dude who's wearing like this really awful stage goblin mask,
ties him up and puts him in a bag, and so he swings back and forth, and that creates enough kinetic energy so that he can break out of the bag and then bounce into the dude who's trying to kill his mom because his mom's a better actor than he is. They don't really explain that part very well either. Like, none of it really makes any sense. But we don't care because he's Speedball and he just bounces around with all these balls around him because drugs. And then Spider-Man is considered innocent, but they never explain, like, they leave that story so quickly, like the Murdoch story. They just completely leave it. And they're like, well, Spider-Man's innocent, no big deal. And then it's on the Speedball fighting this dude who looks like a goblin. And then that story ends, and then High Evolutionary turns a cow into a humanoid cow. That's it. That's the whole issue.
Man, you got some key issues there. You could sell those right now and go treat yourself to a meal.
I could.
You spent 30 cents for those? You could have a meal right now.
You know how to pick them.
Yeah, those are great. I also read a couple of Marvel fanfares from about the same time period.
I like a Marvel fanfare.
I don't understand what's happening in these. I don't have So, are they? Do they run?
From what I understand from Marvel fanfare is that they were issues. Back in the day, they used to make utility issues just in case they couldn't keep a monthly schedule.
Right.
So what Marvel Fanfare was like looking in the file cabinet and saying, well, we have these fill-in issues, but, you know, the team kept doing their 12 issues, so let's publish this.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what these are. And in the beginning of every issue, there's an editorial comic by Al Milgrom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just nine panels of Al's face, basically, explaining to you either what's going to happen in the issue or not at all. Yep. Nope. No, they don't ever explain. I'm looking at a couple of them. I have a bunch of them here. And this one here I'm looking at now, which is issue 22, is basically, seriously, 9 pictures of Al's face. Just with different background colors. He really phones these things in, doesn't he? But apparently, Al was the guy who put all this stuff together, and so.
Yeah, the one thing I remember about fanfare that struck me is not that they were great. At least I never felt like these stories were awesome, right? But what made them awesome was it was one of the first direct sales comics that you couldn't get off the rack. In other words, you'd go into the comic store and say, well, I've never seen this before. What is this? Do you know what I mean? It was new and different. And then the page, if you notice the page on that, quality is glossy.
Oh, there's better pages.
Yeah, it's glossy paper.
So as a kid back in the day, you're like, holy shit, why does this guy got better paper? And why am I spending more on it, you know? But it's awesome. Why do I have to mow 2 extra yards to get this comic?
Yeah, it's $1.50.
Yeah. And I think comics were 75 cents or 60 back when that was coming out.
I think these might be more than 22 pages as well.
Yeah, they might be. And sometimes they featured a story and then something else.
Yeah, there's more than one. In issue number 16, it's Sky Wolf. You know he's Sky Wolf because his name is Skylar Wolf. And so this is in the vein of Black Hawk, where there's a dude with a name and the entire team is named after this one guy. So, and
what issue was that?
Issue 16.
This is
Marvel Fanfare number 16. Came out in 1984.
Oh yeah, I remember this issue.
It has a nice cover.
So they fight Nazi. They fight a Hitler robot, a giant floating Hitler robot, in this issue.
This was kind of their version of the Blackhawks.
Yeah, it's seriously just the Blackhawks, but Marvel style. And they have this random assortment of people, and they fly a strange-looking aircraft. It's like a helicopter, plane, manta ray thing.
I wonder if some of these were series that they commissioned, but then never ended up creating a series for.
This one was probably going to premiere in Marvel Premiere, or where they did first appearance or Marvel Spotlight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just never did, because back then they would put and Marvel Premiere, Marvel Spotlight, shit like this, that it was like DC's first issue. Like, we'll put this character in, and so if it takes off, like Warlord took off, and then we'll make him a series. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. That's because this one, there was, it was like 16 and 17. There was like part one and part two.
Oh, see, I don't have 17. So the story just stops. And I'm like, well, so much for that.
David Cockermart, nice.
I mean, it looks cool. There's all kinds of really insane Nazi robots and a dragon. And yeah, there's a dragon. And this dude who looks like Orion. Oh, no, that's the Nazi robot. That's weird. The Nazi robot has... No, he has, like, the circle things under his feet that you fly on, and, like, the little, like, scooter thing that Orion has. Like, the floating space scooter that Orion always rides around on. And the jetpack, like, the backpack thing that he has with the... Yeah, wow. They basically just said that Orion looks like a Nazi robot, because he does. So, yeah. And they save Princess Leia, but it's a... But the guy that's trying to rescue doesn't believe him, so they're gonna fight. So and then there's a backup issue where Namor saves a horse, but gets shot in the face and needs to pray to Neptune in order to save the horse because he's sad because he got shot in the face.
Horse got shot?
No, Namor got shot in the face.
Ah.
And they got hit with a grenade, so he's not as strong as he needs to be able to save the horse. I should explain the story. There's a shipwreck.
Hey, what does the art look like in that?
Good.
This is Mike Mignola art.
Oh, shit.
Wait, what issue is this one?
Same issue. This is issue 16.
Oh.
Prince Namor the Submariner in a fable in which a ship is wrecked and Namor looks at all the people on the boat and goes, fuck those people, but there's a horse. I'll save the horse. And they attack him because they're assholes. And this further proves his idea that humans are stupid and he should only save the horse.
And according to this database, you could get $1.50 for that.
Oh, I can get cover price? Fantastic. That is wonderful. Yeah, I read a couple of those. Like, these books, like, old books. This is why I stopped reading new books, so I could go back and read all these old things I have. And, dear God.
I actually own a good portion of these fanfares. Like, I'm missing number two. And then I must have said, fuck the price or something. Because the cover price, well, it went to $1.95 or something. And at 44, I stopped getting it.
The last issue I have is issue 31. I might have more in another box somewhere, but as far as what I found.
Yeah, I always pick them up if I ever see them in quarter bins or whatever.
Oh, they're well worth it. You can fight a giant.
They have some
Nazi
good creators
robot,
doing a lot of the giant stories. Hitler robot. That's what I like.
And the back covers are awesome because they're not ads or anything. They're just artwork. I guess like artwork advertising the book itself.
Yeah, it says it was kind of like a bi-monthly Marvel fanfare was a spotlight book. So it was trying to give things spotlight. Like I think some of the issues right after your issue 17.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had like ElfQuest, maybe before.
Oh wow! Before it became
big, yeah.
Sweet, that's cool.
Or no, it was called Weird World. Maybe that was something else. It looks like ElfQuest. That's when I was like, "Why the fuck am I?" Because I really didn't like elves at the time.
What do you mean at the time?
Yeah, well, I was like, you know, you have issues like Iron Man and Doctor Strange and now and then all of a sudden I had three issues of fucking elves and I'm like
I don't know, I don't have elves, but I have this, I think it's an Asgardian story with these small blonde kids and they're fighting monsters. I don't know what's going on with this though. Issues 24 and 25 and 26, I don't actually have a clue what they're about.
Yeah, that's the Weird World ones.
Okay. You're the long kids. Fight
stuff. Shit, I have issue 29, which has an awesome John Byrne cover on it. And it's the death of Anvil and Hammer. You remember those fuckers?
Oh my goodness.
I need to get that. Not only that, but it had Bernhardt and Norm Breitfogel was one of my favorites on that book. Shit, this is fun. It's weird seeing the names, because back then I didn't really think about the names.
Right, of just the creators.
Read
the fucking book. And
that backup story Norm Breitfogel wrote and drew.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, but there's some good ones. Like issue, I think it was like 18, had the main story was a Captain America story drawn by Frank Miller. It's like, dang.
Yeah.
Well, shout out in issue 31, and that is a Captain America story where Captain America fights a sniper, and then the guy he saved turns out to be a villain named Yellow Claw. But in the editorial, he calls out, like, I don't have time to do a real editorial because I'm too busy editing Frank Miller's Daredevil graphic novel, and I'm too busy editing like all these other things that become like massive hits. But like, it's not a big, like, he's not talking about it as the big deal is going to become quite shortly after it exists.
Wasn't there something going on with the Yellow Claw that something? Who was the guy, a Master of Kung Fu, that they can't reuse?
Fu Manchu? They can use Fu Manchu, I think.
Fu Manchu, yeah. Maybe that's the guy.
Fu Manchu makes an appearance in Amazing Spider-Man Annual 21. Whenever they go to the bachelor party, Fu Manchu is on the wall.
Ah.
The sign that says Fu Manchu for mayor, free espresso cups cost 25 cents. The sign that says special 35 cents. They don't say split, they just say special 35 cents. The sign is the worst bachelor party of all time. It's basically just Peter, Harry, and the Flash at a diner drinking, I think, champagne. It's really sad. Like, Peter's life sucks. He's been doing this for like 20-some years, and he has two friends. The issue with Captain America also has some dude in a frog suit.
Oh, the frog man.
I think his name is Eugene?
Yeah. I think his first appearance is in Daredevil, because I remember picking that off of the spinner rack.
Yeah,
isn't he called Leapfrog? Leapfrog?
I don't think they give him a name. I think they just make fun of him.
I need to look up that name now. First appearance of Leapfrog. Because yeah, Leapfrog. Mighty World of Marvel 113.
His dad, fun of him. His dad is just sad all the time that his son is a loser.
I don't think this is the same Leapfrog that... Yeah, it says reprints Daredevil. That's interesting. That's funny that it's showing up in that book and not Daredevil. That's odd.
So, yeah, but in the front, he talks about how tired he is because, let's see, he's edited the recently published Daredevil graphic novel by Frank Miller and Bill Sienkiewicz. Then he edited The Thing Hulk novel by Jim Starlin and Barry Wright. The long-awaited election novel by Frank Miller. He wrote and drew parts of The Hulk, a Mephisto miniseries, and the West Coast Avengers. And these are all things I know about. But apparently this dude was doing a whole bunch of stuff at that point in time. Also editing Marvel Fanfare. So cool stuff.
I wish I had the last issue of Marvel Fanfare number 60.
Why?
It has a Black Panther story written by Walt Simonson, pencils by Dennis Cowan.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I can buy the whole lot for $45. I'm not going to do that, though, because that much. It's like 75 cents an issue. So.
I should fill in the run. I'm so close to completing that thing.
I might keep an eye out at more dime bins, though, these things.
I bet the ones towards the tail end are harder to get. I would imagine. Because if you look at, I mean, just in general... The last two issues of a series, the price always goes up because they're rare because they know they're canceling it.
Yeah.
And they make less of them, I think, because they know it's going away.
Yeah. Well, by that point, you figure the numbers have been dwindling anyway, so.
Sales are going down every so often, so but the last couple issues of a book, yeah. especially when they announce, if they announce a book is getting canceled, that's when things get weird too. Like,
so did you see a spike on the final issue then?
Yeah,
a spike in price, but not distribution. And then usually have supply and demand, because I remember like Avengers Disassembled like had like Thor, the last few issues of Thor like spiked up because they knew it was getting canceled, and they had like the death of Thor or Ragnarok. Yeah, Ragnarok kid or whatever. Yeah. Because I remember I couldn't find that last two issues. I still don't think I have them.
I have trade of that.
Because at that time I wasn't buying Thor, but I was reading Avengers Disassembled or something like that.
Yeah. That's the comic books I read. I just read old stuff.
Did you read anything else, Bill?
What's the past? Yeah, I did read a few things. One thing I got this at the Wizard World. It's from a dude named Landis Blair. And he brings out these, they're not really comics, they're like books, but they're not like prose books, they're like illustrated books. So where every page there's a drawing and then text on the adjacent page. It's kind of done in a what's that dude's name? Edward Gorey type kind of style. It's kind of in that vein. So this book I got is Crossword, a Modern Fable. And So here I'm going to just read like the first page to see what kind of text is on it. So it starts out, Harold Krybel was born to a kleptomaniac father and an apathetic mother. And then it shows a picture of the dude and the wife having a baby. And it goes on. It tells the story of this guy who grew up to have a unfulfilling life as a shoe polish salesman. And when he retired, he decided to become a crosswalk guard. And he took it very seriously. And the kids all hated him. And then bad things happen. So it's kind of it turns into a kind of a dark tale. But it was really good. And this guy has several books. And I think, let me see if it has his website. I think he has all the stuff on his website you can check out. LandisBlair.com. It's BLAIR. So if you like the Edward Gorey type things, very interesting. It was a good read. I enjoyed it. And I think he has about four or so books out.
What was it called again?
Crosswalk. I talked to the guy at the con. He's a real nice guy, so definitely check that out.
What's his name again?
What?
What is his name again?
Landis Blair.
Landis Blair.
And his art is really awesome. It's like I don't know. I'm terrible at describing art since I know nothing about art. A lot of cross-hatching, though. And he was telling me about the new book he's working on where he's doing it like in a different art style. So this is more of a sketchy, cross-hatching. I don't know what. Like a pen.
It looks like art. Like, not like sequential art. Like, it looks like.
Like real art?
Oh, not real art. No, the stuff you see like an art gallery or something. Or the stuff you would see like in illustrations of old books.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, it looks like the thing that, like, if you're reading, like, Tale of Two Cities, and it was an illustrated version, so they would just shove a picture of somebody in there. That's what it looks like, kind of. That style of thing.
Arting. It's really good, though. Check that. Definitely check that webpage out. Then I read this one graphic novel. I don't know why I read it or what I got it for. It's called, let me see, OMAC.
Oh, shit!
Wow, it took like forever to get there.
I was too busy looking up this Landis Blair guy.
So this is apparently volume one, so I'll wait for volume two to read the next one.
I thought volume one had all the story in it.
Yeah, it does.
I wish there was a volume 2.
So I finally read Olmec.
Doesn't it look glorious?
It was not. Yeah.
Oh my god, it's just awesome. I'm gonna get him to sign, Dan DiDio to sign it. Keith Giffen canceled, unfortunately.
For Baltimore?
Yeah. I was gonna take it with me and get them both to sign it, but he canceled late.
Yeah, and like you said, that you mentioned before, that he's, it seems like he's channeling Kirby.
Yeah.
But he's not copying Kirby.
Yeah, and I can't remember if it's issue 5 or 6. I can't remember. But it starts to like go more into a Giffen art style. I don't know if you noticed it, but
I didn't really notice any art changes.
When I was reading it monthly, I was like, wow, it changed dramatically. There was an issue or two in there that were not drawn by Giffen, too. They were drawn by, I can't remember who drew them. It was another big name.
What should it say on here? Let's see.
Scott, Scott Collins. Yeah.
It looks like just one additional pencils, part 6. So one issue.
Mm.
Maybe that's where the art changed.
No, there was a... Do you remember... Did you read the Legion... Back in the day when Giffen was writing and drawing. Oh, no, maybe it was Levitz writing and Giffen drawing.
Yeah.
Did you read that? Like in the deluxe format? If you look at that art style, there are a couple panels where they drew the character, and he looked very much like his old style.
In this, you mean?
Yeah, it's like 5 or 6.
Yeah, in 6, you can definitely tell there's... Well, that's the one where there's additional...
Especially, where he had help. Especially where you'll notice it is when he drew Kevin, like Kevin Coe.
Yeah.
And you'll say, wow, that... And you go compare that to, like, this Legion work, then you'll see the style. It's just fantastically fun, though. This series is so good. It was just like an enjoyment. Like, Olmec was one of my gateway drugs when it first came out, and just seeing this was like, it had that old school.
Brought you back to that,
yeah. It was like Godzilla.
This probably read pretty well in single issues because each one was, there's an ongoing story, but each one was like a standalone adventure kind of.
That's why I loved it. Very Bronze Age feel, because back in Bronze Age, you read an issue, you felt like you read an issue. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you got the sweet story within the issue.
I know. You got 4 stories in one issue.
Yeah, Mike is living it right now.
He just read it yesterday.
Except for the evolutionary one where you just saw a cow nurse made.
Where you get part of a story that doesn't make any sense. Did you guys ever read the John Byrne Olmec?
Yes, the black and white one.
Yeah,
I'm all about the Olmec.
You read every incarnation.
Every incarnation of Olmec.
I really like that story. I just brought it up again.
There are a few, I think, Commandy issues where Olmec was featured as a backup that I'm missing, but that's only a few. Because I'm really closing in on the Commandy run.
Did they reprint those?
I just have the omnibus.
The Jack Kirby Commandy, they reprint, but...
I mean the backup.
You'll never find those. Unless, because they'll never reprint them.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be in the archives by chance?
Maybe. Those archives are so damn expensive, but...
Yeah, they are.
Another thing I liked in this Olmec is at the back they showed like the original design and original pencils that they were going to use for Olmec. And the style is like a little bit different than they ended up with. Olmec looks different.
Never mind, I have all of Commandy. I maybe haven't read all of them. I have them all.
You should read those. Go find them somewhere in your vault.
I've read all of the Kirby Commandy. Some of the later issues I have not read.
How many issues of that were there?
59.
That's one title I haven't delved into yet.
It's really weird.
Well, in this...
The first omnibus they put out.
Oh, Commandy?
Yeah.
I think it's right up Bill's alley. Because it's post-apocalyptic.
A lot of weird shit going on. It's quite serious, you know.
A lot of animals with weird... I mean, that are... Now,
people, anthropomorphic animals.
Yeah.
Lots of different stuff going on.
You can try one of them digitally for like 99 cents. Those ones are available because I have them in hardcover and softcover and digital.
Maybe I should do that. Yeah, I was planning on getting the omnibus at some point.
It's only like $1 million. Go ahead. Isn't that?
I think you get for like 25 or something.
Yeah, it's the archive that's maybe a little more expensive.
The archive is $1 million.
So do you have the archive, Mike?
I have archive 1. I don't have archive 2. But they're having a sale on in-stock trades. I might get it.
Oh, this is like part of the 50% off thing.
So which is better, the archive or the omnibus?
I like the omnibus, and It's all about paper for me. Yeah. The Kirby art works so well on that paper.
Right, the omnibus had the more, what's it called?
Newsprint type.
Yeah, style.
It's a higher quality newsprint paper that they use, but
similar to
newsprint. Yeah, if you take Kirby art and put it on that glossy shit, it just doesn't pop as much.
Yeah. I think it changes the colors and stuff, too.
Yep.
Or can.
It can sometimes. Some of the Marvel fanfares have that issue, where the issue was clearly...
designed
now that I know that they weren't brand new, it makes a lot more sense to me. Yeah, like, some of the issues are clearly designed for newsprint for, like, 10 years ago, but they're just putting them out now, so...
So they look kind of funky?
A little bit. At least you can read the names. At least the names in the books, though. Apparently, unlike Spider-Man, which they just hid everyone's name in the very back. Kevin McDonald, that guy.
What else did I read? This is not normal. I read, I mentioned this last show, Punk Rock Jesus number 1. Written and drawn by Sean Murphy. What?
Have you read the rest of it now?
Nah, just number 1. I'm gonna get the trade. So the concept of this one, it takes place, I think it's in the future. I don't remember. It seemed like it was the future. Where they're doing 2019. So it's in the future, and they're having a TV show where they've gotten Jesus' DNA, and they've decided to clone Jesus. So they have this young woman who, I can't remember how she got picked to be the mother.
Does her name happen to be Mary?
I don't remember. It was a while ago when I read this. They might be calling her Mary. I think they might have been using a name that's not her real name because they wanted to disguise her real name. They don't want to... They don't want people to know who the actual woman is because that would probably be really bad for her. Because it's very controversial, you understand. And right. Most people are against it and protesting and things. And then there's a twist at the end, so I won't give that away. But it was really good, and the art is phenomenal. Sean Murphy is a madman. I like his art a lot. That's Vertigo, so... Frigo knocking them out.
Are you getting the monthly Valiants or just doing the ones and hoping for a trade?
Most of them I'm hoping for a trade. I'm getting Archer and Armstrong monthly.
Ah. Because I read Bloodshot number 2, and that was really good.
I read number 1. I liked that one a lot.
Yeah, number 2 was just as good.
I have a hard time with that dude's costume.
Bloodshot?
Yeah.
The like, Rising like Sun...
It's just so he's so pasty sometimes that like it looks on the page to me. But that's just the old stuff. Maybe it looks better now.
Nah, he's white.
Yeah, he's like Rye.
Yeah, like I wasn't a big fan of Rye's look on the page either.
The first issue was really awesome though.
Yeah, this one is kind of like that. It's like he wakes up again. He's on the freaking plane, strapped to a. Like some kind of cot, and he can't move, and he's having a flashback with his kids, and it's a shitty flashback because he's like playing football with his son, right? And he goes to tackle his son, and his son jumps. You know, he doesn't tackle him on purpose. He like pretends to miss, like swipes right by him, and his son jumps up in the air while he's carrying the football, and he impales himself on the fence. The kid, because he jumps up in the air, lands in the fence.
Dies?
Yeah, and dies.
Oh,
and then he wakes up and he's back on the boat. He's like, what the fuck? But these like nanites that are in him, they're constantly talking to him. Like they're like, these guys are going to fuck you up. You need to break out of here, you pussy. And it's pretty awesome. I like it.
And in the first issue, yeah, that's what it does. So it starts out where he's with his family, and then it gets into this weird thing where he doesn't know what's reality and what's not reality. So they're setting it up pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, and you get a lot of backstory in this. And then they introduce another character that they're sending to go after him. And that character, I'm wondering who it is, like if she has any kind of like Valiant backstory, you know, mm-hmm. like if it's somebody we've seen before, but there's just not enough there for me to know yet. Yeah. But you get a lot more backstory on Project Rising Spirit, their headquarters and the assholes behind it. It's pretty cool. And I read Damn the Unharmable number 4. Such a good book, man.
I'll be reading it in February when the trade comes out.
It all takes place in a shot up car. I mean, half of the book is awesome. I like that book. I like it a lot.
I know you do.
It's like in my top 10 books for sure. Well, there's like two Valiants and one. Well, there's two Avatars and two Valiants in my top 10 books. That means if I had to stop getting a lot of comics, that I would have, you know, a good portion of indies inside of my top 10. And I've got caught up on Avengers versus X-Men, and that's quite enjoyable. There are some classic scenes in there that are just badass that I really like. I really like the way they're portraying Namor, because I love pissed off Namor. I just love him when he's like just mad as shit and he's not thinking. He just wants to punch people and break things. I just love that. And Emma is fucking with him. I like that too. She's like making out with him and all this other shit. The X-Men might not be themselves because they're all, at least the five of them or six of them, are embedded with the Phoenix Force right now. And when one Phoenix, it's like Highlander. So like if they take out one person with the Phoenix Force, that energy goes to another. So that one, the person left holding all the Phoenix Force is going to be the most powerful. It was really good. And then I got caught up on FF, which is Hickman. And that is mm-hmm. just amazing. It's amazing how he writes Franklin and Valeria. Is that her name? Valeria. It's just awesome. Valeria is just a little girl. And what she does with Doom is, man, it's just mind-blowing. Hickman's another one that I really like. I mean, I really like his writing.
Mm-hmm.
They had that issue for free, too. Didn't they have a couple of Hickman books? The Secret and...
Yeah, they had The Secret for sure.
And the Manhattan Project, yeah.
Yeah.
So I downloaded those. I haven't read them yet, but I'm looking forward to reading them.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. What the heck did I read off of? I read a couple of the number ones.
It must have not been too memorable.
I read that Peter Frauzenhausen.
Oh, Panzerfaust or Panzer... Yeah,
Panzerfausten.
Can't pronounce it.
I don't remember it.
That's the Peter Pan in the war.
Peter Pan one, yeah. Peter Pan during the war. It was good. I mean, it kind of set up the story, so there wasn't too much to it, but it was interesting. I liked it. I don't know if I'm going to continue with it, though. I'm not really into war stuff, so at least not that.
I'm into war stuff. I'm not into Peter Pan. I've never been a Peter Pan fan.
I picked it up on Luke's recommendation. And never listening to Luke ever again. It wasn't that bad. It's just, the first issue did not draw me in.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was at. I like war stuff when it's, I like Vietnam War stories, but I don't really like.
You like more realistic?
Stuff. Yeah. Maybe I don't like Peter Pan.
I like when they fight dinosaurs. I like, what's that DC book where they were? The Lost War? No.
The War of the Time for God or something?
Yeah, The War of the Time for God. Yeah.
The dinosaurs. Oh. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I can go with dinosaurs in the war.
I can go with dinosaurs. I can go with, kind of like Turok sometimes whenever they get kind of bigger.
I did read Amelia Cole, from our guest last week or week.
How was it?
Amelia Cole. I read issues 1 and 2. I liked it. I thought they were really well done books. There was only one issue I had with it, and it's more of a pet peeve than a fault of the book or the execution. But it's a thing that I have trouble with that. Kind of takes me out of the story, and I saw it more in issue 2 than I did 1, but the artist is really, really good artist, but what he does with the background characters, and I've seen this done a lot because we've talked about it, is the faces aren't there. Do you know what I mean? There's no nose, there's no eyes, you just could see a face.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
it's a thing.
There's a couple of scenes here that I saw that where the character was in the foreground and not just the one in the background, but the nose is missing or the mouth is missing.
Takes you out of it.
Yeah. There were two scenes where she's hitting the cop. She's fighting with the cop. The cop's like, I can't let you walk away. And she says, fine, if you insist. And she got her wand and she blasts him. And, her face isn't there. So she's like the main character in the,
not there?
The face isn't there.
Well, it's because when she uses magic, her face disappears.
It's a side effect.
Ever think about that?
It's only 7 or 8 panels, but it impacted my enjoyment.
Yeah, when there's something like that bugs you, it can affect you because you'll be reading, and all of a sudden you're like, and it takes you out of the story.
Right, the story floor was fine. It's just that I started to... It started to catch my eye, and I'm like, okay, I see it in this fucking panel. And then I'm looking for it, and I'm concentrating on it.
Yeah.
But other than that, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
It's a good story. Cool.
Yeah. The colors are really nice. We've always talked about dialogue and whether it works for us or not. The dialogue worked for me. It's a good story, and if you like magic... You'll definitely like this. If you like multiverses and magic, I think you'll really dig it. I've always liked the multiverse concept, like Higher Earth or the other one I'm reading and stuff like that, where there's multiple Earths, and this one is like that. Magic is kind of like hit or miss with me. It's like I haven't even finished seeing the Harry Potter movies. I've only watched the first two.
I think I watched the first three.
Yeah, so you're ahead of me.
You can watch three and maybe four, and then you're good. You don't need to continue on from there. You'll be perfectly fine in your life without. Like, I think three is a better movie than the first two by a lot, but... And then four, I like it, but it's a totally weird, like, weird movie because they started cutting everything out of the books at that point in time. And they were kind of confused and didn't know what they were doing. But it's funny because, not intentionally funny, but like there's a lot of unintentional comedy in that movie. But afterwards, it goes straight downhill because the angst and it's too much. So and they're overwrought.
That's probably one of the ones I like.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I'm honestly not sure though. Like,
will probably be different for me since I didn't read the books, so I don't really know what to expect. So I'll have a different experience than you will.
I'm not worried about it. But like, not because of the book, like just as a movie itself, sometimes there's some things that happen that are really like, as a movie, you go, what? That was a weird motivational trait for that person to portray at this point in time. Hmm. Nothing as dumb as like in the first Bourne movie when Jason Bourne kicks the shit out of everybody, and then out of nowhere the female sidekick decides that she's not going to listen to him anymore and has a total freak out moment. I watch it again. It still bothers me. It doesn't make any sense.
One of the other things I want to plug, because Micah got me all stoked in the back issue thing, is I started reading Back Issue Magazine. And this magazine's articles like hit the sweet spot of like when I first entered comics, you know. So the articles are really well done. You learn a lot when you read the articles. It's like Wizard Magazine for somebody that likes back issues, except really wants fact rather than Wizard. I always enjoyed, but it always tried to push the industry in a certain way. Like, this is hot, this is not, this, and it drove the industry, it drove the speculator market. All Back Issue is trying to do is just give you fact, and that's what I like. It's like, you know, these creators worked on Dr. 13, it gives you all the issues that Dr. 13 appeared in, and it tells you why he succeeded in some cases and failed in others, and then it talks to, like, Len Wein and all these creators about him, and... I thought it was fascinating, and I actually made a subscription to the magazine.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've checked out a few issues of it here and there.
I like the interviews. I like magazines that have good interviews.
It's a very
nice, good long ones.
It's a very good bathroom book, I'll tell you that. It's actually surpassed my previews, which is good because previews, I just buy more shit, right?
Whereas the longer you're in there.
Yeah, I'm just like learning more and more about stuff. So it's really good stuff. TV and movies, guys.
Man, I'm loving all these TV shows about toys and stuff that are on now.
I am too. I'm watching Toy Hunter and Collector
Intervention. I know, they're awesome.
One thing I like about the Toy Hunter is that I'm seeing shit that I bought as a kid.
Yeah.
Some of it, which I still have. And then I'm learning about stuff that I didn't even know existed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like. What I don't like about Toy Hunter is I heard they did something and it kind of jaded my thing of the show because Super Ugly was in Toy Hunter.
Right.
I don't know if you saw the Super Ugly episode. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that Keith and them told me that I didn't realize is that the show planted that Luke Skywalker, and that's fucked up, I think. You know the Luke Skywalker that had the double lightsaber that came out? It extended once and then extended twice?
Yeah. Oh, that wasn't his?
It wasn't his.
Really?
Yeah. And that's what kind of sucked. Everything else was his or his friends. Like, you know how he had the old Chips dolls, Punch and John?
Yeah.
Those were his friend's suitcase. That suitcase he popped out, that was his friend's suitcase. And Super Ugly's friends.
That's why I didn't sell them, huh?
Yeah. That's why he would never sell them, because they weren't his. Because the guy made an offer. He's like, fuck no, I can't do it. Even though he, like, bargained, he did say, well, I'll do
that. Yeah, I know they're going to talk about doing the show on a Geeks and Monsters episode coming up.
Yeah, I may listen to that just so I could get facts, because I heard it from Keith, and I want to...
Yeah, you're hearing secondhand.
Hearing it secondhand, so I might not have all the facts there.
Yeah.
I want to hear it straight from Super Ugly's mouth. What he said, it did take the whole day for him to film that little, what it was, it maybe 5 minutes of him,
or yeah, something like that.
7 minutes,
very long. Yeah,
yeah, took a full 8 hours. That Godzilla he sold, that was a Shogun Warrior, he did, that was his.
They found that, right?
Yeah, he found that in New York, I think.
Oh yeah, someone stares.
Yeah,
on a fire escape.
He quote unquote found it.
Yeah, like looked around, and nobody was around. And he just picked it up and took it.
Someone's gonna be watching that show, being like, "Wait a second."
But I found it interesting too, is the two twin brothers that were like had that house full of shit. I mean, it looked like crap. But these two brothers and the wife, they buy all kinds of toys, but they don't like buy them like a collector would buy them. They buy them at like garage sales for, you know, 10 for a dollar and shit like that. Well, they had the first Bumblebee prototype from the Transformers, and then they had another prototype which didn't even have a name. So those
That was those old dudes, right?
Yeah, those old dudes that had the beards.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty...
I think it was a prototype, but it was like... It was a weird one that only came out like in Japan or something.
Yeah, it was a weird one, and it didn't have a name, so they just made up a name for it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was cool.
And I liked, I watched Collector Intervention last night that had, it was the Barbie episode.
Yeah, I saw that one.
And so I had the woman with the Barbies. And so the good part thing about that one was she had the Barbies in her son's closets. And her son had, like, maybe, like, 6 inches of space in his closet that he could put his clothes.
I'm glad you brought this up, because I have a whole issue with this episode. But I'm going to let you continue. And then I'll go off on my rant.
Okay. And the other thing I liked is the other guy was the G.I. Joe guy. G.I. Joe and Hot Wheels cars. And I liked him, because in his house, he had, like, G.I. Joes going, like, up the stairs in his house. Like, so that's where he stored them, on the stairs.
He just stored shit. How do you get up there?
I mean, that's kind of awesome.
He had a what, like a path up the stair that you could take, but yeah, on the other side of the stairs, there were toys. That's like my house. Like Barb's like, pretty soon she's losing half the stairs.
And the other thing, like you said, Mike, one of the fun things about the show is you're watching it, you'll be like, oh, I used to have that. I had that. And I realized that there's a lot of stuff that my grandmother used to have that I didn't have, but my grandmother used to have, because she used to buy like toys for the grandkids, so when they came over, they could play with stuff.
Right.
And she had a lot of that old stuff, so I was like, oh, awesome. And it made me remember one of the things she had. I don't think they showed it on the show, but I think they might have. I think they did show. Oh no, they showed one. But not the one that my grandmother had. They used to have these, it wasn't like a Viewmaster. It was like a little movie thing where you looked into it and you turned the crank and it showed like a scene from a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was a toy. And I think they showed one on the show for something. My grandma had one that was Aliens.
Wow.
So it was like a scene from Aliens, which now thinking back on it, it's like, why did they bring out this
Alien for kids?
Toy for kids.
Rated R movie.
Yeah.
and I don't know if you saw the Alien episode of Toy Hunter, but that one Alien he had was like $300, $400.
Yeah.
And it's they make those a lot of money off of those because of the rarity and the fact that it was rated R and not for kids.
I know, it's just, but I remember when the toys came out. I remember the alien toys. It's just weird because is there a horror movie? Well, not a horror movie, but a sci-fi movie that was rated R, and they're bringing out kids' toys for it. It's like, wow, that's awesome. They don't do that anymore.
And that Barbie that the kids and the father bought for her, the mm-hmm. first generation Barbie, it actually shows up in Toy Hunter.
Yeah, I saw that there. Yeah, one of the women.
Yeah.
What if it was the same one?
Well, that Barbie goes for a shitload. Like, I can't remember what they auctioned off for it, but it was like $3,000 or $4,000. Was it $3,000 or $4,000?
Yeah, it was over $3,000.
Yeah. That's like no shit. I mean, that's a lot of money. But when you think about it, first generation, that's like the first thing, you know?
Yeah, that was the first Barbie.
That's kind of a fucking big deal when you think about all the Barbies that came out. In other words, I would, if it meant a lot to me, like I was collecting Barbie, that to me is a reasonable price for something that is the first thing that ever, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's still in the range where it's ridiculously priced, but I think you'll always get your value for it. In other words, it'll only appreciate or stay the same.
I don't think that's...
It's ever going to lose its value, right? So when you're investing...
Like Megatron.
When you invest in that kind of stuff, your investment will at least give you your money back. Whereas like the comics, they're gonna depreciate.
They're never going up.
Yeah, they're gonna be in a dime box someday. Especially current comics. I'd say Bronze Age, like my first appearance of Conan and shit like that. That'll appreciate.
Yeah.
So like when I buy old issues now, there's a key appearance, like first appearance of Speedball. It's got to be a key appearance or something. But I want to rant on that episode a little bit because there was an aspect to that show that bothered the shit out of me because the kids were not kids. They were 20,
yeah, I know.
24 and almost 30 living with their parents and they're bitching about their mom. And I'm just going to go about this. Maybe it's the way I was raised, and I know times have changed, and you can't always move out and stuff. But if you're living with your parents, you have no right to bitch. I just that bothers me. If you lose your closet, well, fuck you. Go get your own apartment. You're 25.
But, I mean, to their credit, they couldn't have been bitching that much because they let her do it. So obviously she was like, if they did bitch, she'd be like, hey, I can kick your ass out on the street, so I'm taking your damn closet, and you can shut up.
It just bothered me. I didn't like that.
I did notice that, especially the one kid with the full beard.
This guy was a man.
Get out of the house.
He's like 40. It's like, come on, man. I don't know.
That's true. Too bad your mom's taking your closet.
You're going to school or something, or you know what I mean? Like maybe they're in college, they're going to school, they're working on their thesis or whatever. I can understand that, but that's your parents' house, and maybe they had plans to turn your room into a Barbie, and you just never moved the fuck out.
That's right. You're lucky it's just in the closet.
Yeah, that bothered me. And then the other thing that I found very interesting about collector intervention is those fucking things aren't working. In other words, you can go to the collection intervention site and they talk about where they are now. It only worked on one person. The other people are like, fuck no, I found the Star Wars thing and I bought more shit. And it made it worse. So, yeah, I believe that because you meet fellow geeks, you get more connections, and damn it, you're buying more shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if they sold some of the stuff off, now they just have more room to buy more stuff.
Stuff, yeah.
It's like, I cleared a shelf off. Now I can get more stuff to put on it.
So it's interesting to watch the show, then go to the website and see where they are now because the only one it worked for was the Catwoman dude. And he's in the borderline of a divorce, so I can see it working for him because he might lose his wife. But
he's not going to buy anything until the divorce is final, so she can't take half his Catwoman.
He got rid of a lot. And if you read the article on the website, you'll see that he got rid of quite a bit of stuff.
Man, they show some good stuff on those.
Yeah, the Toy Hunter had a Mr. Machine. I don't know if you saw that, but
yeah, I used to have one of those.
It's got a Mr. Machine. Not only that, but I had that Speak and Spell, that Texas.
I had that too. That's what I'm always watching that show. I had that.
I had the Slinkies. I still have like one or two of those G.I. Joes they showed.
I used to have the bearded one.
I have a few of the Hot Wheels that they showed. I have that Luke Skywalker, except I don't the one that they that Super Ugly had, except I don't have the first generation double lightsaber. In other words, mine only goes out once.
Yeah, I've never seen the double one before.
Yeah, I haven't seen the double one either. That was the first time. And I don't know if you noticed, but on Luke Skywalker, his hair is like really yellow too.
I think they said that was like a mail away or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. Because my Luke Skywalker's hair isn't that bright yellow. That was like bright yellow.
Mm-hmm.
But man, yeah, I am seeing all kinds of shit and there's shit there I didn't even know existed. Did you see the speeder bike? The Star Wars.
Oh, the full size one? I can't believe that they sold it to some dude who bought it for his kid for like $1,000.
So he could play with it.
I know. What?
That's a collect. $1,000 is a lot for a fucking toy.
I know. Who's going to buy a kid $1,000 speeder bike?
That guy must have been loaded.
Yeah.
Just like that. A lot of money. Did you see the Transformer dude? That dude's room that has every Transformer?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. And he was just like, okay, I'll give you $1,500 for it. Okay, sold.
What? $1,500? That's it?
Yeah. Well, there was a...
I had ARP.
This was... What was that vehicle? It was like a gold-plated Megatron. Was it... No.
Yeah, it's a gold Optimus Megatron. Prime,
because it was a truck.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was like okay. It's like a gold-plated Optimus Prime that they
some
only
Japanese collector one.
Yeah.
And it was... it was like something you just never see, and it was like, yeah, I'll give you $1,500 for it. I think he
just for that he could have got more for that.
Well, the collector was smart though, the one that sold it, because he wouldn't sell it. In other words, the one guy that does the show said, I'll give you $400 for it. Well, you know, if he sold it for $400, he would have made $750 profit for what he ended up selling it for. He said, instead, I'll take 20%,
a
commission type sale. So I think that guy did it right, because he was trying to say, in other words, he had a room full of toys and he was trying to sell them because they're having a baby and he needed to turn that
to clear that room out
nursery, right, for the kid and have a room for the child because he didn't have any more room. So he wanted to sell some of his stuff. Did you see those, what do you call it, forms? Those, what are they called? Those little...
the color forms?
Color forms. I had some of those, too.
Yeah, I had those.
And I had some of those lunch boxes that they sold.
What, do you have you probably had the Brady Bunch one?
No.
I did. Dukes of Hazzard?
And Mindy and a Dukes of Hazzard and a Star Wars. But I was more into the superhero stuff. I did have that E.T., dinner tray. I mean, I used it all the time. It looked like shit now. It's probably all rusted. But I was surprised how those Lord of the Rings first generation figures are thousands of dollars, man. I didn't even know those existed.
I didn't either.
Gollum Bank and stuff like that from the 70s. Didn't know they existed. It's fun. It's fun looking at your history. I mean, if you toy collected, or because you see a lot of stuff that you either,
if you're a kid when those toys came out,
that you either knew about, or you knew somebody that had one, or you owned it yourself. Do you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and they showed, it was awesome on one scene. They showed they had the Mego Spider-Man, and then they had the, I don't know if it was a Mego Hulk, it was like a bigger Hulk.
Oh, the one with the white shirt. Yeah, that collector one.
No, not that one. It was a different one. He didn't have a white shirt. It was like a hard plastic. You could move the arms and stuff. And he had like you could take off his clothes.
Oh.
But on one shot, they showed both of them. I was like, I had both of those.
Yeah, that one was worth a lot.
I know, I wish I had those.
Well, I have the Mego.
You got the Migos, right?
I got a lot of Migos, so, and they're pretty good shape. But I
like the Mego Spider-Man because you can take off his costume.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them you could take off the costumes. Awesome, yeah. I'm sure that you did that, right? You're like, oh, I wonder what this guy would look with his underwear. So, Micah, any TV, or are you kind of in the study mode?
Oh, mostly in the study mode, but TV, what did I watch? What's something? Nothing that important, I guess.
I've been in the mode that Bill is. I'm enjoying these two new shows. I started...
I need to watch them.
Breaking Bad on Netflix, instant streaming, and First time through, I watched the first season. Absolutely loved it. I was, like, so hooked. I watched 4 episodes in one night. I pretty much finished them in 2 nights. But I'm hooked on that show. Looking forward to getting into season 2. I'm watching Hell's Kitchen and the Hell Hotel thing still, and I find those really interesting. Except they voted off a character in Hell's Kitchen that I thought she was one of the better ones. She was the most consistent.
Yeah, I'm not watching. I still haven't gotten into those.
I enjoy them, and that's something that Barb enjoys too. So, well, she's actually
Mike.
The collector ones too, because she wants to have me an intervention, or she's getting ideas to sell my shit.
She's writing down how much everything's worth.
Yeah.
Went through your database, being like, "This is worth it."
Well, I've always told her if something happens to me, like, you really got to concentrate because some of this shit is worth money, and some of it's not. Mm-hmm. Movie wise, have you guys watched anything? Did you guys do your homework and watch what the fuck is that thing called?
Mozart's Sister? Not yet. I'm going to, though.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm excited to watch it.
It was horribly bad. I could have turned that movie into a half hour, 20-minute movie. And
did Keith like it?
Keith is a historical buff.
Or was he so drunk you couldn't tell if he liked it?
No, he was sober last night. Okay. Keith has an eye for history, and like if something's historic, that's like the people without faces in the comic book. It really bothers him when something that is supposed to be about history is not historically accurate. So yeah, there were some instances that he
had some issues.
He had some serious issues with some of the scenes. The acting was good. Did it really provide me with anything that I could have just went to the wiki and just figured out? Not really.
There is no emotional stakes in that movie. Not for me, at least. Bad.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, Amazon Prime.
Yeah, were you kind of bored too?
Yep, I was kind of bored. Like, I don't know what I expected, but...
I want to talk to you about one scene, but I don't want to give it away or... Because Bill hasn't watched it.
You can talk about it. That's fine. All
right, we'll wait. No, Bill. All right, never mind. All right, go ahead, Mike.
All right. Do you remember the prince or the one guy that was having kind of like this relationship with her, but it was almost like a weird relationship where it's like, bring me some compositions and we'll talk?
Yeah.
You know that guy? Mm-hmm. I have no idea what that scene was where she... where he kind of yelled at her and kicked her out. I have no idea what the motivation was. And neither did Keith. I was trying to get it out of him because he paid more attention to it than I did.
I think what that was a bad editing job. I think that there's probably a scene somewhere that... I think that there's supposed to be a scene in between, like, before that and before he starts yelling at her that explains his displeasure, because it's not in this movie. Maybe in the director's cut.
Well, that's bad.
It was horrible. try to interpret yourself, but you come up with four or five different things, and none of them make sense. It's like, why did he do this? Why did he, like...
Her last position was so bad, he was like, get out of here.
Yeah, he, like, blackmailed her in front of, like, a bunch of people, but you don't know why. You know, I don't... And then he started talking about death, and is he really dying, or is he just fucking with her?
Yeah, I'm trying to see if I can find the scene.
Because he basically said, kiss me on the lips. Or no, he said, kiss my forehead, and then kiss me on the lips. And she loved him, Bill, so there's some story behind it. He never kind of returned any kind of love, but he hinted to it later on, and you didn't know really if he was using her or what that weirdness was. But when you watch it, maybe you can look out for it. Try to figure it out for yourself.
Now that motivation. You know it's coming, you can...
There are also a lot of scenes in there that didn't need to be in there. Like, there's like a 5-minute pissing scene. I'm like, why do we have to watch women piss in the coach? I'm like, and then what do they call those things that squirt water out?
Okay. I'm not going to say what I was going to say.
I have nothing but bad jokes.
So Mozart's sister, I will give it this much. I watched Badass, which was Danny Trejo, which I loved, which I didn't even know was based on a true story till Keith told me. I guess you could go search Bearded something or another on YouTube and see what that incident was. A Vietnam vet defending some poor guy on a bus and beating the shit out of the bad guys. But Badass, I really enjoyed. Well, I love Danny Trejo, so I knew I was going to like that. I really enjoyed it. And then Abraham Lincoln versus Zombies, that was a mess. So I enjoyed, I mean, even though Mozart's sister was slow and drug on and you had to read a lot, it still was somewhat better. Daryl's going to listen to this and yell at me, but I think I enjoyed it a little bit better than Abraham Lincoln versus Zombies.
Wow.
And I did watch The Campaign, which is at theaters, and it was really funny and scary at the same time, because I think even though they exaggerate certain things about politics, I think it's true. That was a good one.
That's with Will Ferrell?
Yeah, yeah. And the guy, Galifianakis? Yeah.
Zach Galifianakis.
Galifianakis.
You nailed it.
I like Galifianakis better. So. I watched another documentary called Being Elmo, which is about the guy who's Elmo.
I saw that.
But
can you make a recommendation to Daryl, please? Can you tweet him that?
Oh, yeah.
Please do that, Micah. That would make my day. Say I have a recommendation for you on Netflix for your next choice, Being Elmo.
And you cannot watch that movie and not come out of it loving the Muppets.
Absolutely. Well, it's mostly about this guy, but it's also a stealth documentary for about Jim Henson's the Muppet thing as well. Like, because mostly it's about Elmo, but in telling his story, he has to tell sort of like the background story on the Muppets. Not the whole background story, but like. In his telling relationship of the Jim Henson and Frank Oz and Kermit, what's his fate? I can never remember what Kermit's last name is.
Kermit had a last name?
Kermit the Frog.
Not the Frog. There's a person.
The Frog.
There's a person named. There's a puppeteer named Kermit who's kind of a cool, like kind of a cool old dude. Looks like Santa Claus, but like, there's a lot of information about sort of
the history of the Muppets,
the history of Sesame Street and the show and that kind of stuff in there. Mm-hmm. So even if you're not interested in Elmo, which is understandable because that craze was sort of massive.
And I guess it's really not about Elmo. It's about the guy who does Elmo.
Right. But I can understand like how if Elmo annoys you because he became, like, he took over the world for a while there, that you might be put off. But, like, it's not about, It's all about the dude who is Elmo and how, kind of how Elmo took over his life.
Like they never expected. Created this character and then it like blew up.
And it blew up, and it blew up way bigger than anyone ever thought it was going to.
Right, because it was originally, I guess he didn't really technically create the character.
No, he didn't.
Someone else was doing the character, and it wasn't working, so he came up with a new concept for the character and a new voice. And that was,
and then
that's all she wrote. Yep, and it blew up huge.
What year did Elmo come out? Because I don't remember that as a kid.
It wasn't when we were kids. Well, the dude who does Elmo is about our age.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was doing some other stuff. He played the owl who played the saxophone.
Because I know he did blow up, but I don't like Elmo.
No, neither do I, but...
No one our age likes Elmo.
Because I would love... I mean, to me, Elmo looks like Grover. He's just red. And Grover is just so much more groovy. He's just, like, out there.
The It's interesting. There's a really
sad story about, like, go ahead.
No, you can go.
There's a really sad story about, like, his last time hanging out with Jim Henson. Because he just created, like, him and Jim had worked together to create, like, the new character. Who's the dude who looks like George Clinton, basically? He's like the George Clinton Muppet. Mm-hmm. And then, like, they showed up on Arsenio Hall show. And then, like, 2 days later, it's like, Henson was dead. It was like, oh, wow. That's good times. So, yeah. Like, ultra depressing stuff. Total tearjerker move.
And the guy who did it's cool because, like, that's all he ever wanted to do since he was, like, a little kid. He used to make puppets and stuff, and that's all he ever wanted to do was be a puppeteer. Actually, he just wanted to work for Henson, right?
That's what it was. Gotta go real quick. Hold on, bear
your
back.
Your tea's ready.
That sounds good. I think you should tweet him too, Bill. Just send him a tweet and see what you get. And then let me know what you get back. Oh, you don't have a tweet. You could send him an IM on Twitter. That would be just as good. Just say, you know, we watched Being Elmo and think you'd like this movie, Daryl.
What was I going to say? Oh, there was one cool part in the movie where he went to visit... Michael probably remember. It's been a while since I saw it. There's one cool part in the movie where he went to... So I can't remember where he was from, like Philadelphia or something.
Yeah. Baltimore.
And when he was in, I think it was high school, his class took a field trip to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically blew off his class to go see, and I can't remember who he went to see.
Kermit Richardson.
Okay, that's the guy you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because he had written to him before, right?
Yeah, he wrote to him, and... his mother called the guy because this is the 70s apparently. So, like, you just get on the phone, you can call people or whatever, right?
Looked him up
and the guy was like, yeah, the guy was like, hey, that'd be cool if he's ever in town.
Yeah, stop by.
Send him by my place. And, well, of course, they didn't have enough money to just send him to New York. But so, a couple years later, when he went on a field trip, he blew up all the classes basically to go. He basically had like full-time jobs for TV like when he was 17 years old and working
but it was cool when he went to see this guy in New York because he just like showed up. I don't know if it was unannounced or what, but the Kermit guy, he like totally like brought him in and talked to him and spent the day with him and showed him everything,
showed him how puppeteering is supposed to work and all that kind of stuff, and like took him under his wing. And apparently, he was just like a nice guy.
Yep. And then when the kid graduated from, what's the guy's name? I'm calling him the kid. I can't remember his name.
Kevin Clash.
Yeah. When he graduated, he like immediately graduated from high school and got a job, like creating a puppet for this like a TV show.
Yeah, he created a puppet for a local TV show, like in Baltimore. Did a couple of. Local news things. They promoted him because he was really good, sent off a tape, and immediately regretted it because he immediately was picked up by Captain Kangaroo and in another show called like Space Comet. So
I think it was a Great Space Coaster.
Great Space Coaster. God, Space Comet.
That was awesome show. Did you watch that?
Yeah, I remember that one.
Was the Great Space Coaster the one with Gary Ganoos?
Gary Ganoos.
No, yep. Ganoos is good Ganoos! I love that.
Yep. It ended Kermit Love. That's his name. But that show ended the year, the very month I was born. All right, I got to go. My guests are here.
Okay. Thanks,
I'll
Micah.
I'll keep it running in the background, though, so it can continue.
All right, I can get this one out if you want.
All right. Bye, guys.
All right, later. Bye.
Bye. So that's good. Daryl should definitely watch it.
Yeah, I think he should, too. I'm going to recommend that as my movie choice.
It's really good. You learn a lot about the Muppet stuff, and then Kevin, the dude, is a cool guy, so it's interesting to see his life and how he always wanted to be a puppeteer, and then he ended up creating this one of the biggest characters of, you know, modern Muppets, whether you like him or not. And I don't like Elmo, but I'm too old for Elmo, so.
Yeah, I don't get that, or that new girl with the pigtails either. I forget what her name is.
Zoe,
yeah. But like, my niece loves those new characters. Those are her characters.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they're not mine, but...
Yeah, it's the next generation.
Yeah, it's next generation. Me, Ernie, and Bert used to love Grover, Cookie mm-hmm. Monster. The Count, we ought to give shout-out to The Count because the guy who did him just passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Snuffleupagus, I never could get because he was like there but not there. Was it a figment of Big Bird's imagination or?
Yeah, but then they made him real. They ruined him.
Did they really make him real? Was that recent or?
It within the last 10 years, yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, they changed him, so now everyone can see him.
I was never a fan of Big Bird. Oscar the Grouch, though, I loved.
Yeah, Oscar was good.
Because he was pissed off all the time. I just liked that. That was awesome.
He lived in a trash can.
Yeah. So you got any movies that you watched?
And I did watch a movie called The Goon.
The Goon. Oh, the one that's on with the guy from American Pie?
Yeah.
And
Jay Bruchel or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
It's actually based on a true story of this kid who. So it's this guy who was a good fighter and basically got brought onto this minor league team, and his sole purpose is to fight this hockey team. So he's a hockey player, but he can't really play hockey. All he can do is fight. And it's good. It's actually
Sounds like the Adam Sandler. What was it? A Happy Gilmore? He started off a hockey player, and he really sucked at hockey. All he could do was fight.
Yeah. But I guess they have these guys, and who else is in it? There's another fairly big actor. I don't remember his name though. Who plays like the? Liev Schreiber. Shriver plays like the current. So this kid is like, so Sean, what's his name? Sean William Scott plays this guy who's just starting in hockey. And then there's an older guy who's like who's been the goon or the heavy on his team for like years and years and is getting near retirement. So that's kind of the play between them. But it was really good. It was done by the guys who did a movie called, now I'm blanking on the name of it.
What's the premise of it? And maybe I can guess it.
FUBAR. It's called FUBAR.
Oh, I never heard of that.
That was a Canadian movie about these, like, these burnout guys.
You like Canadian movies and French movies.
Yeah, Canadian and French movies are the two.
The French one I can't understand. I have a hard time with that. Why do you like about it? Is it the style? Is it the language? Is it because they are at least the ones that I've watched. I think I've watched three, maybe four French movies.
Yeah.
And what is it about it in general?
I'm not sure. I like the French comedies a lot. I think I like their sense of humor.
Oh, okay.
the French sense of humor.
Well, can you recommend a French comedy? Is there like a movie that
like my favorite French comedy?
Yeah.
Put me on the spot now.
Oh, well, you'll have to let me know if it's on Twitter later. Say just check this one out. You might like it. I want to see. I will give you this. I haven't seen many foreign comedies. They're usually drama or thrillers or horror.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be curious to see what one's like.
There was one that they remade into an American version. I think it's like Dinner with Friends or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a couple that they've made American versions of. And yeah, I'm blanking on the name of the dude. There's one guy who, yeah, I'll have to.
Yeah, just tweet me.
Come up with some suggestions.
I'd say text me, but you don't have that capability.
No, I could tweet you though. So, I do have there's two movies that you guys need to watch on DC Noise, because I don't think you've seen them yet.
Okay.
Troll Hunter.
Have you seen that yet? And that I doubt if the other two guys have.
Keith might have watched it. You got to watch that.
I doubt it.
You need to watch that especially.
Okay. Troll Hunter.
And, oh, shit, what was the other one?
I wish you would have told me last night. I would have picked it.
You would have picked it as your...
Yeah.
And, oh, what's the other... I can't remember the name. I always forget the name of it.
Troll Hunter's going to have captions, isn't it?
Yeah, it has captions.
It's going to piss off Daryl. Daryl hates... Daryl can't watch a movie where he has to read because he likes to do two things at once. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Perfect.
It's going to make him angry.
The other one I can never remember the name of. I talked about it on the show before. It's like Bubba and Steve's.
Oh no, that one we can't pick because I had that on my list to watch, but they both watched that one.
Oh, they did.
Yeah. So the rules is that the ones that you challenge, the people you challenge couldn't have watched it. You could have watched it, but the two people that don't pick it have to have not seen it. Dale and somebody.
Yeah, Dale and Tucker's.
Yeah, they've both watched that one because I think I actually recommended that one and they both watched it. Yeah.
Yeah, you should still watch it anyway.
Dale and Tucker's something or another, something like that.
Yeah, you'll like that one. That's right up your alley.
Yeah, I don't even remember what our latest picks are. They don't look too good. One's called Dad Savage. That was Keith's pick. One was Battle Royale. I don't know if that's going to be good or bad, but sounds like that might be good.
Which version?
Battle Royale number 2, because they both see number 1. I picked Bounty Hunters.
Battle Royale I still haven't seen, but I always wanted to.
Well, join in. Let us know. I still want to know your opinion on Mozart's Sister because
yeah, I want to watch that. I want to watch that one.
You tend to have an eye for more detail than I do, and it had me in the first half of the movie, and then it just
lost.
I lost some of the characters' motivations.
Right, that's what
it bothered me. And one of them in particular is that prince or whatever of France. I got totally lost. And it sounds like Micah didn't understand it either because he even said bad editing because it's such a key piece of the movie. I mean, to me, it's what the movie was made for. And to not have that piece of the puzzle, that's bad.
It all falls apart.
Yeah. That part I really had a problem with. But is it well done? Yeah. You can see the acting is good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the direction is good. It's a little long and hard with subtitles, but it keeps your interest. And man, I just had a couple of problems with it, and it made it fall apart for me.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Better than the cave movie?
It was better than Legends of the Fall. I hated Legends of the Fall. I absolutely hated that movie.
I've never seen that, and I probably never will.
It's worth seeing just to see if you could... It absolutely amazes me. It perplexes my mind. I don't understand it, how it could be Keith's one top 10 movie. Like, I just can't... I can't see why he loved it and why he still loves it so much. Like, he'd go into the theater by himself and watch it twice.
The only thing that it can be is that the first time he saw it, for some reason, it connected with him. Like, it meant something to him. There was something in it that connected to whatever was going on in his life. Yeah. And then, because that happens sometimes. You just bond with something. And then from that point on.
And that's the part that fascinates me. And I just don't. And I try to gauge, like, what happened to you that this... Because it's... I find every... You had talked about... I can't remember one book. I can't remember if it was a manga or something. But you said something like, I couldn't get into it because I couldn't, like any of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I felt about Legends of the Fall.
Yeah.
It's like, I absolutely hated every character that was in that movie. I didn't like one of them, so it made it hard to watch the movie. If you can't like one character, even...
Yeah, there's got
to
be someone
when I say like, is there could be villains you like too, right? I mean, there could be... You don't have to like, bond with the character, but you could like a character, even if they're bad.
You could be interested. There could be interesting characters.
They're nothing like you, and you hate that character, and you could still like it because they're interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This movie had like nothing for me.
Interesting.
That's why I hated that movie. Whereas Mozart's sister, there were some characters that were interesting, you know. And Keith, I think, would have liked it a lot more if it was more historically accurate. That's what I think he didn't like about the movie.
Yeah, I could see that. I'm actually surprised they didn't try and keep it more historically accurate.
Yeah.
I did see a couple other movies I remember. I forgot that I had watched.
What else?
I watched 21 Jump Street, the new one.
Yeah, I liked that one.
Yeah, it was good. I think they approached it in the right way. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek. And they were having fun with the concept.
I agree. It was like something that... It was nothing like the TV show, right?
Right. They didn't go at it... They could have done it like serious and yeah, it's 21 Jump Street. But they were just kind of like... We know it's a goofy show, so we're just going to do a goofy movie. based on the concept. And have lots of callbacks to the old show.
Yeah. In more ways than one, especially towards the end.
Well, even I liked, and it was cool because they set it up that way from the very start. Like when they first met the Ice Cube, they said, like, we're reviving the 21 Jump Street program. And they're like, what did they say? Something like, we know it's an old program that isn't applicable anymore, but we're upgrading it for the modern times or whatever. He said, you might be asking why we don't just come up with a new idea, but we like to take old ideas and bring them back again or something like that. It was funny. So that was good. I also saw The Dictator.
Oh, I saw that one too.
Sacha Baron Cohen movie.
Was it offensive to you?
No.
Barbara, I'll always remember that movie because the look that Barb gave me at every time I laughed was just priceless. I mean,
why are you laughing?
She had this look of anger. Like, why are you laughing at this? I don't even know who you are. Like,
I don't know who you are.
You're an asshole for laughing at that scene. She just walked by and she said she was disappointed in me. for laughing at this scene, because there was a couple scenes that really made me laugh. One of them was when he lost his cell phone in her vagina. Like I was like off the chair, Bill. Like I wasn't even sitting. I was like laying on the aisle because I was laughing so hard. She was looking at me like, "You asshole." Yeah, it was funny. What'd you think?
Side.
What was that? I missed it because it broke up a little bit.
Oh, the same scene you're talking about where they're reaching in trying to find the cell phone and she puts her hand in and then they like touch hands and then
romantic.
They brush hands and then they hold hands. And they the inside shot.
And he's talking in conversation on the phone while it's in her vagina. That's just awful.
It's opening and closing.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah, there's a few
funny scene.
There's a few bad scenes in there, but there were two or three that I was like rolling with.
The other, I think, probably the funniest one was when they're in the helicopter.
Oh yeah, that was a good scene.
His friend and they're talking in whatever language they were talking, and they're talking about he's gonna buy a Porsche 911.
Yeah.
He's like, 9/11, 2012. And there's like the old people like sitting across from them.
Yeah, they thought they were going to be terrorists. That's awesome. The one that Barb really hated that I laughed at too was when he was making fun of her education about women. I just...
Oh, the women's studies or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know why that hit me. I don't believe that at all. You know what I mean? I just thought it was funny.
You're laughing at all the wrong parts. All the
wrong parts, yeah.
What was his character?
Yeah. I posted a picture of the show notes for Geek Brunch just for the hell of it. Like my notepad where I take notes.
Oh, yeah.
And the interesting thing about this is I posted it on Twitter and Harada PR, which is Harbinger, you know, from Valiant Comics.
Mm-hmm.
They replied to post, and they said, Harada Global Conglomerates humbly requests that we are in your thoughts and we would know because all the thoughts are ours. And I don't remember, I put Valiant Universe in the notes and Archer and Armstrong and I think Bloodshot, but I don't know what happened there.
Isn't that like a robot or something? Who's responding? Or it's
But how?
But they had to. Had they look? Had to read the notes.
Yeah, they'd have to because it's a picture. Like wow. If it's a text and they're auto replying. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it can't be a robot.
Yeah, that's just weird. Well, it says they follow me.
Apparently.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was very interesting. So those were out of the library, too, huh?
Yeah, those are library books or movies.
How about any food?
Jeez, food.
Barbara's aunt sent us some, like, all kinds of different squashes and zucchini.
Yeah, I saw her post a picture of all the...
fucking weird stuff. And she like grilled it with onions and tomatoes, and I thought it was fantastic. And then she took these weird squashes, which look like Chinese throwing stars. What is it called? Patty pants? Patty pan? Patty pan squash?
Patty pants.
Potty pants. Potty pants squash. And she grilled them on the grill, and they tasted so good, man.
That reminds me of my new character, Potty Pants Man.
Potty Pants. That was really good. That stood out. And the chicken. Then the next day, I like took the same vegetables and chicken and put some soy sauce on it, and it was really good. Mm. That was delicious.
Yeah, I can't think of anything terribly interesting that I've had lately.
I ate a sub yesterday from a restaurant we had never eaten at, and called The Keg, which is in downtown Manitou Springs, which is, I don't know how to describe it. It's such a weird area. There's like witches and warlocks in that area. And there's a lot of hemp.
It's a hippie town?
Yeah, it's like a hippie town. And
that's near you?
Yeah, it's such a fun place to visit. They have like an old arcade too. Like, it's like outdoor arcade, and it's got all the games that we grew up with. Do you know what I mean? They're all the quarter.
Outdoor arcade.
Yeah, well, it's like outdoor, indoor. It's like parts indoor, part outdoor. And I don't know how they cover their machines when it rains or snows, but it's...
They have all the old school stuff.
All the old school stuff, yeah. Even stuff that's sometimes beyond our time, like some of the prototype pinball machines that were really, really old, or some of those weird hunter games with where you hit a target you have to aim at. But yeah, it's a fun arcade. And the area is really fun. They had opened up a new comic store in there, and I expected to see like an awesome comic store just because of the area, and because of the people in the area that are so unique. Like, this is a place you could go visit, and it would be awesome to like just read a book and just watch people go by because the people are so different.
Mm-hmm.
And even like some of the lifestyles, like there's guitar players and people that are just barefoot and they walk around, you know, they're like freewheeling it. And they probably live off of like people, you know, like when they sing and stuff, they live off of the money that you give them while they're singing. I don't know. I can imagine. It just makes my brain work. Like, how do these people live and stuff like that? Because it's such, some of them seem like they have such a simple lifestyle. They live off their backpack. You know what I mean?
So that's where all the hippies go to die.
Yeah. It's an awesome little area. It's interesting. They have ghost tours and shit like that. It's bizarre.
And how far is that from you?
Oh, it's only about 30 minutes, maybe 20 minutes.
That's not bad.
It's just right outside of like Colorado.
Oh, so you're talking about the comic book store?
Yeah, it was disappointing.
No good.
Yeah, it just, I was hoping for more like of a retro store, just because that's kind of the area they're in. And it was more of a modern store that wasn't even really a modern store. It's like they had comics on the shelves and not a lot of indies, which, and I thought in an area like that, Bill, that
they should have
the indie
underground comics, right?
Yeah, the indie market
and stuff.
Yeah, you'd have like Robert Crumb, and so like I was like looking at a shelf that I thought would be like, I thought I'd see like a lot of indies and a lot of stuff I just haven't seen, and a lot of old stuff because of the area that it's in. I mean, maybe I'm stereotyping it, but I thought, you know, underground movement would be huge there. And it was mostly mainstream. And then they even had this weird shit that says, well, if you want a new comic, like one that just came out, ask the guy behind the counter. I'm like, why the fuck would you do that? Why would you not display the comics?
Wait, what did they have on the shelves then?
They had like comics that were a month old. And I'm like, what kind of fucking strategy is that?
Never heard of such a thing.
That's the ridiculous strategy. And their toy area was an absolute cluster mess. I'm a real, even though my basement's a mess, I have little pet peeves, and there's certain things that bother me about stores. I just think a store like that could thrive in that area with the right material. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And you have an incredible amount of visitor traffic, because that's like it's known for
where it's located.
Yeah, where it's located. It's very artsy. It's very, like, they had over the Labor Day weekend, they had like a labor, what was it, like an art show?
Mm-hmm.
Tents and stuff like that with all the local artists selling stuff. And It just seems like it would drive
area. Yeah, they should have like a lounge area with like big puffy sofas and stuff.
Did have that.
You can read.
I'll give them that. They did have that. At the front of the store, they had a pretty good sizable square footage with a very looked like a very comfortable couple of couches. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they did have that. Did they have local art at least on the walls and stuff?
No. The walls almost were bare except for a couple of like modern posters like the Green Lantern event that's coming out and stuff like that. But it just was weird because like if you wanted like I'd have Dan the Unharmable right up there. Do you know what I mean? Because I see people in that area and it screams down it screams certain books.
They would love Dan the Unharmable.
Oh, they'd love it. And Archer and Armstrong, I think people would love some of the Valiant stuff, you know, and it wasn't even there. Hmm. And I was just like, what are people liking in this store? They had some cool toy displays, but what was in the displays was very weird. I mean, it just had no sensible logic to it, except for like the GI. They had one GI Joe display, which had it made a lot of sense, but I don't know. I would love to own a store, Bill, if there was money in it. You know,
comic store, yeah.
But if I could live off of that, it would be. I think it'd be a lot of fun to be surrounded around something that you absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
The you know the comic books themselves and the toys. I that's my passion, all that stuff.
I know it is.
Yeah, it'd be fun. If we all lived in the same area, it would be interesting if we could get like a handful of us to own a store and try to turn it into a profit, like six partners or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be fascinating.
You have to make a lot of money to support six people, though.
Well, with six partners, it would have to be more of a passion thing. Do you know what I mean? trying to break even.
So you want six rich people who...
Yeah, yeah.
Just want to have a store and just hang out there.
Yeah, a place to hang out and have a cool time and...
Not lose money on.
Break even, not lose money. But make money, but... Hopefully, it would pay for everything that you're putting into it, plus you'd make something. It'd have to be unique. I don't know, opening a store now with the way digital's coming now, I think would be absolutely insane.
Opening a store now is insane just because it's so hard to make money.
Right, and the price of books are so expensive. And everything's going digital, but so you had no interesting foods.
I can't think of anything I've had. I'm sure I have, but I need to do a better job of writing food down.
I had a really good sandwich yesterday. We had some. There's a place called Frankie's Steak something or another, and Freddy's Steak something or another that just opened up, and I had a Chicago dog from there, and it wasn't the best Chicago dog I had because Chicago dogs usually have the peppers, like two hot peppers. That one did have two hot peppers in it. It has tomato. Mm-hmm. It has mm-hmm. onion. Mm-hmm. It usually has some kind of like celery relish.
Yeah, it has like the cucumber. Green relish.
Yeah, some kind of natural relish rather than the store-bought relish that's really juicy. And... it was good. The thing I liked about it is it was a grilled hot dog rather than a broiled or
mm-hmm.
It was really on the, like a flat top grilled. So it had that texture and the bread was too. That was good. And then we had ice cream from there, but I've had better. I've had a lot better. I had a sundae, which I asked for hot fudge and marshmallow. I'm a marshmallow freak. That's one thing I miss about camping is the roasted marshmallows. I used to love to do that. But, man, they just didn't put enough of chocolate or
marshmallow.
It's really weak. It's almost like I ate plain ice cream for, you know, 56% of that or 60% of that sundae was just plain ice cream. But do you want to wrap this one up?
Sure.
I'll try to get this episode out early, like on Wednesday before I leave to Baltimore. I might do it tonight.
When are you guys leaving? Wednesday?
Yeah.
After work? You working Wednesday or?
No, we're leaving Thursday. I'm off Thursday. I'm gonna have two really, really freaking busy long days. I know it. They're gonna be like 10-12 hours.
Well, Tuesday and Wednesday, yeah.
Then I'm off till the next Tuesday. So that should be a good break. I just know it's gonna go by. What I hate about Baltimore is it's only 2 days.
It is.
I hate it. Like if it was 2 days in my backyard, I wouldn't mind it. But if it's 2 days and you're traveling a long distance like I am, it should be 3 days.
So just Saturday, Sunday?
You have to be real selective. Like if you have four panels, well, then I'm hardly on the floor and in the alley, right? Mm-hmm. I have to go to a couple. And the day goes by fast. You go to two meals and you've already eaten. I mean, eaten. You've already used part of your time because when you go with a big group of people,
right? If you go to a big group with lunch, then you could blow a couple hours.
That's just 3 hours maybe.
Yeah.
And those are some of the best times. Get me wrong, because you're chatting and geeking out and all that, kind of having all this interesting conversation with people you don't get to have in person.
Right.
So but then
you miss half the show.
Right. Then you miss. Half the show, because the hours are just like from 10 to 6 or whatever. So I don't understand why Baltimore is not 3 days, because even like some of the smaller conventions, the freaking Comic Fest in Denver is even 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that convention is like small. Yeah, so. All right, well, have a good... Are you doing anything for tomorrow on your day off? Or?
I think we're just chilling here. Possibly painting.
Oh.
Daughter's room.
Wax on, wax off.
That's the plan. What about you?
I think we're going to do the fair tomorrow, but I'm not sure. And
Renaissance fair?
Today I know we'll do something. We'll do a movie or something else. Yesterday we went to Manitou, so that was a lot of fun. Matter of fact, Barb's probably like, let's go eat. So I better get going.
Okay, want to give our contact info?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Shit. You just heard Bill, Mike, and Micah, Geek Brunch. This is episode, good Lord.
I'll look it up. You can talk.
All right. I don't know what episode it is. You can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com. We could use some more iTunes reviews. They've been stagnant.
Yes, please.
I know you're freaking listening, because I've been looking at what's hot on...
iTunes.
Give a freaking review if you like the show. If you
would appreciate it.
You're listening.
If you like episode 166 of Geek Brunch.
Yeah. So we could use some more iTunes reviews. You could join our Facebook page. We'd like to get more activity on that. We're on Forum for Geeks. Scroll down to Geek Brunch. There's an episode thread there. We have emails, Mike, Micah, and Bill at comicbooknoise.com. Twitter accounts are do_what, DBM00, and Mike Myers Brunch. And we will talk to you in another 2 weeks.
Awesome. Thanks for listening, everyone.
All right. Bye-bye. Have a good one, Bill. Bye.
You too.
Yeah.